Blog Talk Radio.
Gusty Renegade Justice in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy, what it is, and how it works. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the broadcast. Hope it is a constructive use of your time and energy. Then getting into this evening, the program that aired yesterday, today's date, make sure you get that, today's date being Friday, January the 14th, the program that aired on Thursday, January the 13th with Scott Lively, we addressed so-called homosexual behavior, anti-sexual behavior, and not sure if we did a good job getting across the importance of non-white people understanding why this behavior is incorrect and why we should be in total opposition to it. Wanted to take this opportunity to kind of share some of the commentary that we've had on this program on this subject matter, to kind of go back into the archives and piece together from a lot of different segments that we've had over the past couple of years. And hopefully hearing some of this will help make things a little clearer. That is the hope. And I'll go to the phone lines after I'm done, but this is going to be a whole program of clips. I'm hoping that I was able to do a solid job as an editor in selecting different pieces to put together so that a narrator will not be required, that you will be able to follow just based on what's being said. Context will be provided. Hopefully I won't have to say anything. People will not be sitting confused when everything concludes. That is the hope. So we will hop right to it. And I thought this would be a good idea because we've done almost three programs here, the context of white supremacy, and just some of the incredible things that have been said. I ran across this clip today when I was digging through and trying to find material. This is just one of the things that just leaped out at me while I was going through the material.
This is not in the book, but it's relative. Dr. Perkinson, he has a website devoted to this book, texastough.com. It's linked in the description for this program. If you click his name, it'll take you to the site. He has recent different articles and other interviews that he's done about this about this book. In one of your more recent articles, April 10th, 2010, you talk about the Texas Board of Education. They recently voted to eliminate a term from the list of words that school children have to master. Can you tell them what word they eliminated and why that's relevant to this discussion?
It's astonishingly they eliminated the word justice from a list of citizenship virtues that kindergartners are supposed to kind of understand. And they also eliminated the term, I think, sharing with others.
Context of white supremacy. That is from June of 2010. That was with University of Hawaii professor and author, Professor Robert Perkinson. He authored the book Texas Tough. It is about racism, white supremacy, and the so-called prison industrial complex. You actually will be hearing from Dr. Perkinson again as we roll through this program, but I just thought, I know we picked up a lot of new listeners and people who maybe haven't heard a lot of the programs. If you go through the archives, I guarantee you will hear some incredible things. That's not, you know, to boast about the program or anything like that. Just people have said some really just extraordinary things on the broadcast, and I think that will even be evidenced as we continue with this program. Again, this is the January 2011 fundraiser here at the Context of White Supremacy. I hope people, if you found the program to be of constructive value, please invest. That would be extremely helpful in continuing the efforts. As I said, I want to get my Skype account set up so that it's global. That would be, man, I think that would just add a whole nother dimension to the program to be able to have people more regularly from all over the planet to discuss racism, white supremacy. I really think non-white people would benefit from having communication, constructive communication about white supremacy with other non-white people. So hopefully we can make that happen, as well as the book with the book list at Amazon.com. It's under Gus T. Renegade. Books there are potential programs, so support any way you can. I'm going to get into the broadcast. Again, these are clips. I am going to go to the phone lines once I'm done. It's going to take a while, so sit back, enjoy. I hope it will be of constructive value, and I will get your feedback after it's all done. So this would be the Context of White Supremacy, Anti-Sexual Effeminization Mixtape.
It's a whole other discussion why I really don't like to say homosexual Europeans, because to me, to say European is to say homosexual based upon their story. This is European society and culture. We call it America. We can call it Australia. We can call it whatever we want to, but they are one nation. They have never left their traditions. They may have hidden them for a period of time when they started dealing with people, because they knew. You know how people will respond to you if it's a family-centered, child-centered society and you're a pedophile or you're a people of pedophile? You're not going to make any inroads in trade, your religion, or anything else. So knowing that this is what these people are, and you want to, sometime in the future, you want to dominate them and control them and take their resources, or in fact have them in such a state of mind that they would be more than willing to give you their resources, and you can't come in with that. It means you have to hide your nature. And they did this very well, but they never left their traditions, particularly in what I call old Europe, which is the norm European society, Sweden, England, Norway, all the rest of it. That's old Europe. This is what we're living in is new Europe. Australia is part of new Europe, but it's all still one nation. So they hid these things from us as we became more entwined with them in terms of being with them so long and being disconnected from who we were and being susceptible to ideas of black inferiority and white superiority, then they were able to begin the process of schooling us into what they needed us to be, into that backdoor mentality that Carter G. Woodson talked about. They did this not only in the areas of economics, which is really evident in our community, and politics was evident in our community. They also did this in the area of sexual behavior and that institution, if you will. So they are, as I like to say, we are in school. And right now we're probably like maybe in middle school, getting ready to graduate to high school, if you're talking about an educational career that goes in the postdoctorate, in terms of our approximating their sexual insanity. And that's how far we still have to go, but this is also how far we have come. Homosexuality, in terms of it being accepted, is probably like right in the middle of that educational career.
Mm-hmm.
And what we don't do when we're assessing, because people always ask, "Where, you know, this is about as bad as you can get." And I said, "No, it's not." And okay, well, what's next? Where are we going? If you really want to understand what's going to happen when we get to college, then you have to look at Europeans in their classic society. You have to look. The people, when you say a classic society, just like when you say classic African society, that's when we were our best. That's when you could look at us and see the quality of our character at the spiritual level. You could see our greatness, if you will, when you're talking about a people's classic society or classic civilization. So if you want to know where Europeans are trying to take us, are in the process of taking us, then you have to look at classic Roman and Greek society. And classic Roman and Greek society in terms of sexual behavior were primarily pedophilic. The primary form of relationship was homosexuality, and the primary form of homosexual relationships was between an adult and a child, primarily a man and a boy. So right now all you hear is the homosexuals, because they know where they're trying to take us, and some of them aren't even denying it. But they know that we're not ready for that quite yet. We're still just starting high school. So they know that that's something that would turn us instantly away from them and turn us into people who would see them as not this innocent gay thing that they want us to see. And gay, of course, is a very political word. So they are in denial that they are pedophiles. They're in denial that homosexuality is pedophilic in its nature. But if you want to know where we're going, where they're trying to take us, back to who they are, then you got to look at their classic society. And that tells you the word. You know, it's like the difference between what somebody says and what somebody does. You can look at how they have moved us. There was a process of moving us toward the acceptance of homosexuality that began with the rape and was accelerated in the 60s and 70s with the sexual revolution, which really was aimed at white women, but we were caught up in it too. So this is taking us to a particular place. They have moved us in the talk shows to where incest is rapidly becoming no longer an issue. They have opened up the prisons to allow the rape to occur. There is so much rape going on now that it's not funny. Trains are not even talked about anymore in terms of the rape of girls and the rape of women. I've talked to female homosexualized African females who see their life mission as turning out African girls, turning them into homosexuals.
Wow.
We look around the world, all of the child stealing, people call it adoption, all of the child stealing that Europeans are doing around this planet, all of the judges in the court system who are handing our children over to not only European individuals and couples, but also to openly homosexual European couples. It's a whole other discussion why I really don't like to say homosexual Europeans, because to me, to say European is to say homosexual based upon their story. You know, like as a social scientist, you want to find out what a people are about, their priorities, what they love, what they don't like, then you follow them historically. And if there's something that you consistently find in a people's behavior and in their environment and in their work from the beginning of their, social existence, and that exists now, then you know that characterizes them. And you find homosexuality back into the case. So this has always been a part of them. You find bestiality all the way back into the caves. This is a part of them. So for me, it's to say European is to say homosexual. And some people will want to argue with that because their best buddy is blah, blah, blah. Well, in that case, you do have some Europeans who are in denial. You do have some closet homosexuals within the European community. I don't think you have any within the African community. And that's why when I talk about Africans who behave homosexually or in an effeminate fashion, I say that they are homosexualized Africans or effeminized Africans, because this is something that happened to them. This isn't normal or natural to their being.
again, our guest for today's program, Dr. Nell Irvin Painter. Please visit her website. Again, it's linked right in the chat room. Just click her name. It'll take you right there. If you are not at the chat room, the address, www.nellpainter.com. It's N-E-L-L, painter.com. I want to go through some of the things tracing the history of white people, some of the aspects that you can still see remnants of today, and some of the aspects that have kind of been discarded or changed as time has moved along. One of the things you talk about, the pedophilia in Greco-Roman society, and Mr. I told you I might botch some of these names.
Yeah.
Johann Winckelmann.
Okay. You've got a really interesting guy. His name is Jan Winckelmann.
Okay.
But that's okay. And that was very sophisticated of you to pick up on that. Very few reviewers have. And it's an interesting topic. Jan Winckelmann is considered the father of art history. He is not considered a father of race theory or even of white race theory. But his idea was that the ancient Greeks are uniquely beautiful. Are you with me there?
Oh, I'm listening intently.
Okay. So the ancient Greeks were uniquely beautiful. Now, Winckelmann, this is an 18th century figure, late 18th century, and he worked for the cardinals and the popes in Rome. This is before Greece became independent, so it was difficult to actually go to Greece. So when he studied the Greek statuary, he studied Roman copies. And Roman copies were made of Carrara marble, which is white. Now, Greek marble comes in various shades, but it's often kind of brownish, and the Greeks painted their statuary. And so what became foundational in art history, and art history gives us our images of beauty, what became foundational in art history was the statuary that Winckelmann saw in Rome, which was white, hard, and male. So his ideal figures were white, hard, and male. And that aesthetic lives on in art schools, not so much now, certainly not in my art school, but in the 20th century art schools, in plaster casts of ancient statuary, which is also white.
Hmm. Wow. Well, I was just talking to a friend, and he was showing photographs. He had been through Europe, and I was telling him about your book, Preparing for the Show. And he was looking through his photographs, and he said, I saw these pictures, and they were white statues, and they had the small boys in the statues.
Yes, yes.
He said, that's what you're talking about. I didn't,
right,
didn't even
right.
put two.
There are very, very few female figures, very, very few. Winckelmann himself was a gay man. And he lived in the Catholic world there was all men. So even if it wasn't homoerotic, it was certainly homosocial. It was, and ancient Greece, of course, the upper reaches of the society focused on men. So to the extent that our ideas of beauty are hard, white, and male, you can thank Jan Winckelmann.
Wow. I can't pronounce the names, but I can, at least read a little bit. This is page 61 from Dr. Painter's The History of White People, where she is quoting Mr. Winckelmann, and she says that Winckelmann's romantic, fervent friendships with young men brought him into contact with the pride of the human form. Winckelmann disdained art depicting women, for he considered the supreme beauty of Greek art rather male than female.
Yeah, yeah. And if you can sum up, I don't know if you ever took an art history class, but those images from ancient Greek art, they're all male.
Hmm. Wow. I've never taken an art class, so that's all new. This was all new to me. I learned a lot as I said. This was a very interesting trend. Not everything is talked about. There are a lot of aspects of history that get buried and just become taboo subjects. This is from page 129 in Texas Tough. For some bosses, lashing flesh took on a twisted, even sadistic, homoerotic quality. When officers wanted to convey special dissatisfaction, they stripped off a convict's clothes and let loose on the naked hide, quote unquote. Other prisoners were made to watch or help pin the naked victim to the ground. After one particularly bloody episode, a manager had other convicts parade before him to, quote unquote, smell the bat. That's page 129. And then I'm moving forward. This is on page 352. One former detainee, this is talking about the immigration detention facilities. One former detainee who later pled guilty to nothing more than credit card fraud testified in federal court that he was repeatedly punched and kicked, paraded naked in front of female guards, cursed as a Muslim bastard, and anally violated with a flashlight. There seems to be a consistent trend of this sodomy and homoerotic abuse. Abner Louima, a lot of the pictures from Abu Ghraib. Can you kind of talk about this trend and if you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, because the part of the stereotype, the kind of post-slavery stereotype that fueled lynching had to do with this kind of like super potency or this hyper-sexualized masculinity myth of black men, that therefore when people wanted to subject black men to kind of special degradation, they tended to reach for kind of sexual tools. And that's why, you know, so many pageant-like lynchings in the 1890s involved castration in ways that, you know, extrajudicial killings of whites typically did not. And why you do get some of these spectacles of sexual degradation that took place in the prison system when guards they usually didn't have to resort to these to this kind of sadism. One, because they might get in trouble with their superiors if it was too outlandish. And one, they had so many tools of degradation at their disposal and so much power that most people never challenged them. But periodically, when they really got going, or in isolated units, you do get these kind of spectacles of degradation that went on. And of course, we saw this again after 9/11, when the stereotype of Muslim men as being, having incredibly conservative notions of male masculinity and being repressed sexually and so on, that a lot of the interrogation tactics involved sexual humiliation that they thought would be especially trying for Muslim men, and therefore would kind of break their spirits faster and lead them to confess, even though we now know that most of the people subjected to this sort of humiliation didn't have anything to confess. And so you got at Guantanamo, for instance, female interrogators smearing substance that looked like blood onto the face or hands of a detainee, telling them it was menstrual blood, flirting with them, as well as stripping them naked and subjecting them to, forcing them to engage in kind of homoerotic-looking, circus-like conduct. So there is that strain of sexualized racial debasement that runs from the late 19th century up through the present. Another strain is the victimization of black women for the kind of base pleasure of more powerful white men. And of course, that was a you know, a central component of slavery. But if you look through the archives of black women imprisonment, and still there remains a very strong current of sexual victimization by guards, which has, you know, improved somewhat in recent years, partially because DNA evidence has allowed some women to be able to prove it if they can save a little bit of sperm from their victimizer, they can, whereas no one would believe them before or no one would care, if they're able to get that mailed off to an attorney, they can often get a conviction in a way that they wouldn't have been able to in earlier eras. So, and that's certainly a strain. If you look all through the history of the women's incarceration in Texas, sexual liaisons between white male guards and female prisoners is a pretty important theme.
But when Lockup visited Kentucky State Penitentiary, we met Fleece Johnson, a longtime inmate who practices a very different kind of homosexuality.
Well, we have sexual desires, right? So you got a bunch of men locked up in one place. All of them get whore. All of them's horny. All of them got sexual desires. So what are they going to do? You won't let them have a woman. They're going to have each other. Somebody's going to have to give up some booty. And it's just that simple.
The most memorable story that Fleece told us was about the place and importance that booty has in a maximum security penitentiary. And he went on about it and on about it.
In his prison, booty. Booty was more important than food. Booty. A man's butt. It was more important. I'm sorry. It was more booty, having some booty, was more important than drinking water, man. I like booty.
Johnson went on to tell our crew how he used to satisfy his sexual desires, especially during the 1970s and 80s, when he was most active and prison security was more lax.
When I see one, and he looks good to me. When I go see him, I say, you come here. I say, I'm telling you what, I like you, and I want you. And we can do it the easy way out of the hallway. So the choice is yours, right? And it was always yes.
Johnson also had a warning for the new generation of inmates. They might be asking for trouble from old-timers.
You know, they got this thing where they sag their pants, pass their butt. It's a style. They call it some sort of gangster style. You know, it's sexy to us, right? And see, but they weren't prepared for this, right? So you sag your pants in here, man, somebody be up in your butt, you know. And it's just that simple.
Johnson even let the lockup crew know that when he was in his prime, they wouldn't be safe from his advances either.
If y'all had been in here back then in them days, and as much as I like booty, I probably felt one of y'all butts as y'all was walking past me. And dares you to say so. I'm not no shame in my game. This is nothing that I'm ashamed to admit. I am what I am. I'm a warrior too, you know, so let that be known. I'm a warrior.
Soledad O'Brien, I don't know how many people looked at the CNN program with Soledad O'Brien interviewing Wayne Williams, who was the accused killer in the Atlanta child murder case. And she presented to him, this was on, national, international television, wherever CNN goes, this is a week or 2 weeks ago, where she confronted him, I have this document, Mr. Williams, where you are saying that you were in a training program where the CIA was training you to kill black people. Now, who knew about that? He said he didn't want, he won't talk about it. And she kept asking, well, why won't you talk about it? He said, I'm not going to talk about it. But it was something that he himself had written. See, we don't want to go there.
Wow. I just, right before the program started, since you mentioned Soledad O'Brien, I have heard so many of your lectures where you implore black people to read the newspapers, look at the news. I was checking out CNN's website to see if there were any current events, and today, matter of fact, in 12 minutes, Soledad O'Brien is doing a report entitled Gary and Tony Have a Baby. And this is Gay Dads Unafraid to Chart New Ground. And they have a bunch of stories. They have two black males who are, I guess, apparently gay, and they're adopting children. You touched on earlier the extraction of masculinity. Do you think this is related to that effort to extract masculinity from black males?
Yes, I do. I think, in other words, it's in the ISIS papers, the essays on the motherfucker and the original motherfucker, where the system of racism, white supremacy, says that, I mean, I'm talking about culture speak, the dialogue that is going on at subconscious levels within the culture, but things that people say all the time. I mean, the reason that the word motherfucker is used so often amongst black people, I maintain, is because the white man is the man. Any other male can only be boy, girl, woman, or baby. And black men fought, don't call me no boy. The system of white supremacy says that you got three choices, woman, girl, or baby, but you're not going to be a man. I'm the man. Now, if you're not going to be a boy, then you're going to be girl, woman, or baby. And black men have called black women mama. They've called the men baby. The men call the place where they sleep a crib. And so that's where the word motherfucker comes from. So you see, and it's all about you're not going to be a man. And so if you have a situation where you have two males and a child, then one is the female. Now, this is no accusation against the men. This is not homophobic discussion. I'm talking about the behavior dynamics that occur within, where people are pushed and moved in all of the areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Like a black sociologist was explaining to me earlier today, he said, Dr. Welsing, the talk amongst some young black men is that they like to relate to women who are lesbians and want to be in bed with two women where one is a lesbian. You see, so the psychiatrist is going to look, well, what does this behavior mean? What's the meaning of this behavior? Because Neely Fuller, the author of the textbook for victims of racism, said as early as the 1970s that the system of racism, white supremacy, was going to have black men in dresses. And on one of the magazines several years ago, they had Ricky Williams, the football player, in a wedding gown, marrying his coach, Mike Ditka. But the black man was in a wedding gown. See, everything, in other words, if there's going to be white genetic survival, there has to be the annihilation of the masculinity of the black man. So you see black men with hair longer than women and earrings on. One of the gay football players said he was gay, but the amount of jewelry that the other football players were putting on in the locker room, you know, would put him to shame. So this is no attack on individuals, but we are in a system construct that is moving us systematically and steadily towards genocide. I was just reading a book about the Holocaust of Semites of the Jewish religion, and where they talked about the removal of the Jewish men from the community. That's exactly what we have happening right now. You see, so that was a short 12-year process that occurred under Hitler from 1933 to 1945. That's about 12 years. Ours is going on over a more extended period of time, in which as long as people don't understand the context, they will fall victim to where they're being pushed. It's like if you are in a boat in the river, you're trying to get to a certain point on the other side of the river. You've got to understand not only the wind, where the wind is blowing your little boat, you've got to also understand the current in the river, where that's pushing you. And right now, it's like we are in a little boat in the river trying to get to some point we call success. But we have no understanding of the wind, and we have no understanding of the current in the river. And so, you know, we are in our little boat, and we could all be drowned in short order. But we are being moved systematically. You see, when you incarcerate a huge percentage of the males in a community, and then the young males have no model for male functioning, but they have father hunger and longing for male contact and embrace. You see, if you start moving large numbers of males from the communities, then you end up with some females beginning to act as though they're the males, but they can't procreate, just like two men can't procreate. And if people think that you can have two men in a household raising children and having sexual contact, and you're not influencing the behavior of the children, then you just don't have any understanding. That would be the same thing as thinking that you can speak English in a household and the children don't learn to speak English. Children learn by observing what is going on around them. And so this is, again, this is, you know, not personal to the people. But again, as long as people, again, I keep going back to the Semites of the Jewish religion and their experience under Adolf Hitler, where they didn't have a clue that there was a plan to really exterminate them. They didn't have a clue, and they wanted desperately to be accepted as white. And so they couldn't see, and even though Freud was sitting right there and he couldn't see, supposedly the West's most important behavior scientist, he had to run from the Nazis. He was busy talking about sex repression when he should have been talking about the repression of Semites. And why should this white supremacy government be repressing Semites? But he was busy talking about sex repression. And so a third of the world population of Semites of the Jewish religion was wiped out. They didn't have a clue. And we don't have a clue as to what is going on. And we can sit up and look at Barack Obama, President Obama, being ridiculed and attacked every day. The stronger, the more critical the decisions he makes, the more serious he looks, the more he's hated. And it's because, I believe, even the people who classify themselves as white, who voted for him, who wanted to conceive of themselves as being liberal, if they don't understand the core fear, when a person says, I'm white, I am white, that's like saying I am a part of the tiny minority of white people on the planet and I am genetic recessive. And that in the brain computer has to add up to, I have to most fundamentally be concerned about white genetic survival and the fear of white genetic annihilation. So I see a strong black man, intelligent black man, capable black man, who likes black women and loves his black children. In the White House, this makes me begin to quake. What if the people of color are in charge on the planet? So I've got to attack every day. I think about, I hope nothing happens to this man, but think about what has happened to all of the other strong black males in our history. And what does the philosopher Santayana, George Santayana, say? Those who do not learn from history will repeat history. So every black person, young, old, needs to stop laughing, clowning, being buffoons. I mean, just look at what is shown of us on the television. House of Pain, all of that ignorant buffoonery is worse than Amos and Andy could ever think of being. The film Precious, the worst imaging of black people that has ever been done in history. And intelligent people like Oprah Winfrey, they don't even see it. After somebody sees Precious, after they see House of Pain, see, Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany, one of the most important people in his administration was the minister of propaganda, Joseph Goebbels. And he knew how to, they didn't have television at the time, but put horrible, despicable images of Semites of the Jewish religion in magazines and newspapers and movies, so that they would look like life unworthy of life. The name Hitler called them was Tiermensch. That's translate animal people. Subhumans. That's us on the television. You even have some of these courtroom shows. You got a black female judge goosenecking her head. Look at the image on, what's his name, Jerry Springer.
Mm-hmm.
This is life unworthy of life. And we wonder, we don't have jobs, we don't have housing, we don't have decent schools. Well, anybody looking at these images, these people don't deserve life, and at the same time that they talk about obesity being one of the most critical health care problems, 90% of the black people that are shown on TV are obese. You don't see any obese white women on the whole of the television. None. And so that's just like saying, look at these people. They're causing the explosion in the cost of health care. They just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat, and they don't care. So why should we be making certain that they have health care? See, but if you don't understand the context, you'll just be looking at the images and thinking, well, it's okay to be hundreds of pounds overweight. It's okay. It's okay to be at House of Pain. See, that's parallel to it used to be Good Times. Was what? Good Times was television sitcom where the black father was unemployed and the teenage son was a buffoon and a clown. See, that's why they liked the musical Porgy and Bess. Black people should never act in Porgy and Bess again. Because all the white people want to look at, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing is plenty for me. And a crippled black man. See, we don't have a clue. But we better wake up. We don't have a lot of time.
Context of white supremacy, our guest, Dr. Francis Kress-Welsing, wanted to make sure I reminded listeners from Good Times, John Amos's character, the father, was ultimately killed on that program and extracted from the broadcast.
I wanted, if you all could share for our listeners, you all talk about how non-white males, black males, I think black males in particular, are consistently emasculated in a lot of mainstream films. And you point out a lot of different characters. I think I read one of your reports where you tracked for, I believe it was 2005, 2006, and 2007, each of those years during Black History Month, a black male was emasculated in some way, shape, or form during Black History Month. Can you talk about that pattern and what problems you see with that?
Well, if we are going to delve into emasculation, obviously, one, again, just to give a slight definition to that, in case that hasn't come up before, is that we talk about masculinity, and obviously that can be defined in a number of ways, but when we're talking about mainstream movies, what Hollywood has told us is that masculinity is defined by being a heterosexual male who either gets the girl or is on his way to getting the girl, to put it in chauvinistic terms, and that this masculinity is validated throughout the course of the movie. And being emasculated would make this character somehow less than masculine, either by making him feminine in some way, shape, or form, or thwarting him sexually, or some other aspect of that nature. Now, excuse me. And when we think about the movies that you're talking about in terms of Black History Month, you're talking about Big Mama's House 2, which we referenced earlier. You're talking about a Tyler Perry movie, and that was his first movie, actually, that was released widely, which is Diary of a Mad Black Woman, and we're also talking about referring to, at least just, and this is just Black History Month alone, also referring to, I know this one's going to get Frederick up out of his seat, but we're also talking about Norbit.
Okay.
Starring, if I can say that, Eddie Murphy. I think I should let Frederick take over from here because I know he's feeling this one.
Well, I mean, I think also when we talk about mainstream contemporary movies, what we do have to do is not rush past the past. And this emasculation trend is nothing new in that it actually harkens back to the era of enslavement, whereby it was actually a threat to have the biggest and blackest male, roaming around feeling as if he could threaten the power structure. You're talking about, especially in a plantation-type setting, where you have perhaps fewer whites than black slaves, you have to somehow gain control. and intimidate, you know, the large mass. Now, in this type of situation, it was important to take, say, the biggest and the strongest and make an example of them, right? So that way, listen, if Big John, you know, got the business, well, what am I going to do as far as resisting and trying to change the situation here? And so I think that when we look at images and as far as non-white males, black males in particular, it's not uncommon to see not necessarily light-skinned black males, but particularly those brown, dark-skinned, chocolate, you know, black males who are, you know, who, when we say emasculated, it's not necessarily physically anything done to them, although they can get killed off or, you know, physically roughed up. But also when we talk about, say, the utopic reversal, that's one of our six archetypes whereby this character has authority, but in actuality they're unable to actualize their authority. And so for some reason it's undercut or it's just undermined. And so, for example, look at Fantastic Four, where you have, again, a brown-skinned, dark-skinned black general played by Andre Bauer. He's a general, but yet when he's giving orders, you know, Reed Richards is essentially able to tell him, I know what you said, but no, we're going to do it my way. And unfortunately, Andre Bauer ends up being obliterated at the end. We see this. Yeah, I mean, and we've seen this trend as far as emasculation, how it, you know, it carries over to black males through this utopic reversal, because the utopic reversal is what I guess you'd say a more nuanced New Age, you know, version of the same concept behind, you know, say lynching back in the day. And again, I'm not saying that blacks are being lynched on screen. I'm not saying that. But in terms of the idea of this power dynamic must be preserved. And even though you have your own business, you are a threat, and so therefore we're going to lynch you. I mean, a lot of people forget the fact that in addition to the rumors of, oh, you raped the right woman, okay, there were a lot of black businessmen who were lynched. Why? Because they represented a threat to the existing status quo. And again, when you talk about on the mainstream movie space, what we often focus on is, oh, well, look, you know, in Armageddon, you had a black general. Oh, look, in iRobot, you had a black police chief. You know, oh, look, there's diversity. But in actuality, if we look back at these images and study in context, well, not even just study, just look in context, especially in comparison to the other white characters, we actually see that these characters don't have the power that they, in theory, are ascribed. And so in actuality, this becomes part of this emasculation pattern whereby, you know what, it's just best that the audience leave, you know, not feeling perhaps threatened by this idea of black power on screen, perhaps. Again, we don't know exactly what the reasons are or the reasoning behind these movie makers. But what we do know is what we end up seeing, just the final product. And again, the pattern is fairly solid with respect to how non-whites are essentially, at the end of the day, put in their place, especially in contrast to whites who are able to ascend, you know, the power structure, manipulate and change the powers that be in order to execute their aims or desires. And that's what opens the door up to the white character patterns of which we call prototypes.
And it's important to think about, and I guess I'm going back on the promise that we made, because I am going to have to dip into black and white, because when we think about where Hollywood has come from and why this pattern of emasculation is so strong in mainstream movies, you need to look no further than the first mainstream movie ever made, and that's Birth of a Nation.
1950.
Right, and the context of Birth of a Nation is, and a wildly successful movie, no less, the
Shonen
KKK, right, the KKK thwarting a black male, this is, again, actually a white male in blackface, but thwarting a black male who has been accused of raping a white woman. I know. I hate when that happens.
I'm chuckling because, no, again, context of white supremacy, our pleasure to have Frederick Gooding and Khalid Patterson. Justice and Gus T. Renegade, no one has ever come on the program and asked, why is one of the hosts of this program named Gus T. Renegade? And bang, I could have pointed them right to D.W. Griffith's classic Birth of a Nation and said, look what happens to the black character, even though it's a white person in whiteface. Just pay attention to that character. You'll understand a lot about what's happening here on the cows. That movie, I would recommend non-white people check it out. White people have said this is landmark cinema, watershed moment in film. I wanted to play non-white adversary here before we move to the next topic. In terms of what you all talked about in terms of the emasculation of non-white males, Tyler Perry had a film released again this year during Black History Month where there was a black person in a dress, black male in a dress. And I mean, just in terms of the consistency of seeing this, you all list a ton of non-white males that have been either made to wear a dress or engaging in some sort of homosexual behavior. Will Smith in Six Degrees of Separation, Dwayne Johnson, Eddie Murphy, we already talked about, Martin Lawrence, Chris Tucker, Wesley Snipes, even further back with Flip Wilson in the 70s, Richard Pryor. I don't think many people have seen The Toy. Richard Pryor is made to wear, and I mean, let's even back up. Richard Pryor is bought to be a toy for a white child, and before he can do that, he can't get a job, so he becomes a maid and wears a maid's dress to serve fried chicken for white people in Louisiana.
Well, Mr. Jefferson, sorry, you confused me. I thought you were recounting the storyline for Bringing Down the House.
You're really.
What, right? Queen Latifah.
Well, now I'm confused because I thought you mentioned Queen Latifah in Bringing Down the House. I thought you were mentioning Anthony Anderson playing a butler in Agent Cody Banks. But
I'm sorry. A black male serving a white child. I thought you were talking about Shaquille O'Neal and Shazam.
Ah, jeez. Right. Well, I almost thought that you were talking about Man on Fire, where Denzel is essentially a peer with Dakota Fanning. But anyway, I'm sorry. You were saying, Mr. Jeff.
there's a long pattern of this sort of thing. I guess if I was going to play non-white adversary, this is just fun. These are just, you know, it's just movies. What's the problem? You know, there are white people that, you know, put on a dress. I've seen that on Saturday Night Live and the Pat character. That happens a ton. Robin Williams did it. You all are just, you know, you're looking, you're making up stuff. You're making a big issue out of nothing. And you're being homophobic. What would your response be?
Well, I would respond, first of all, like any politician, I would deny, deny, deny. But to give you a real answer, for starters, if it's just a movie, well, I would agree, and maybe we can give the scenario to you, Mr. Jefferson. You know, if it's just a movie, hey, you know, why don't you take Pulp Fiction and take it to Justice's class? I know school's starting up. So, you know, just take Pulp Fiction and, you know, play it for the, you know, I'm missing up the age, I'm sure, but, you know, play it for the third grade class. And, you know, which grade did you say?
Fifth grade, likely.
Yeah, there you go. I'm so close. You can see I didn't study in school. Take it to the fifth grade class, third grade too if you want to, and just start playing Pulp Fiction. And I want to see how quickly the parents and administrators and staff descend like flies and eject the DVD and then eject you from the school campus. And why? Well, because they would say that's inappropriate for that audience. Can't you see it's rated R? It's violent. It's got profanity, nudity. It's got all these images that could impact the minds of our youth. Well, okay, if that's the case, if the violence, profanity, and other content would impact me, well, why wouldn't the consistency of the racial images somehow have an impact?
Would it be accurate to say this is socially engineered sexual deviance?
Oh, absolutely, it's socially engineered sexual deviance. I mean, you're talking about fortunes being made by highly questionable people, by what we would call the bad guys, and by emasculating your men, and by revolutionizing your women so that your women are part of the problem instead of part of the solution. You betcha. You're talking about socially engineering a society that cannot stand up for itself eventually, that cannot even protect its own children. Mm-hmm. How bad is that?
God damn.
You are now tuned in.
I was sitting
at
the house smoking a blunt, flicking through the taillight vision, when a news flash flashed across the screen. Eddie Long molesting two little boys. Damn.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long. Man, you know you're wrong.
No, you're wrong, Eddie.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
No, Eddie Long.
Why you got tight t-shirts on?
Man, this made me preach you with extra premiums on.
You are now tuned in to reality rap. Hey, Bishop, what's under that skirt? Kill Illuminati all through your body. 12 gay shoddy, that's your new birth. Let's begin the matrix of the church. You gotta understand that it's mind control. White people made up Jesus. The world is ran by homosexuals. Eddie started with a small group of robots looking for something to ease their pain. Eddie Long is a mason, he knows the truth. Religion is a way to make his pockets lean. Bootleg, black, selling bones, research that. I ain't scared of your motherfuckers, bitch, know that. The gay mafia, the brotherhood. They booty holds the gateway to Hollywood.
Eddie Long,
damn, Eddie,
why you got that wig on?
Man, this nigga got a wig on.
Eddie Long,
man, this shit got a thong.
I bet your ass wear a thong.
Man, I bet your nigga got a thong on.
Eddie Long, paying boy for the dome.
Man, do y'all see this shit?
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
Man, this shit fucked up, man. Damn.
Why you got that spandex on?
This thing got a motherfucking spandex,
man.
You lying to the people, house nigga, sissy. The ancestors schooled me. Talking that shit with a Johnny Taylor wig. In a pulpit smelling like booty. Take your charge, call on your white guard. You off your square. High-raised man, stand before us. Denying I'm in riots, even here. Jesus never had a girlfriend. That's what Eddie taught teenage boys. Bible scripture, mind control. Give him your tithes, he'll push a Bentley toy. Secret society inside of me. They'll kill him if he exposed the Illuminati. The father didn't ask him, he ain't tell. Eddie tell them hoes what they wanna hear.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
Eddie Long,
why you got that wig on?
Man, this nigga got a wig on.
This shit gotta stop. Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
This shit gotta stop.
I bet your ass wear a thong.
I bet that nigga got a thong on.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
When y'all gonna wake up and see this shit, man?
Paying boys for the dome.
Man, do y'all hear this shit?
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
Man, this shit fucked up, man. Damn.
Why you got that spandex on?
This nigga don't want fucking spandex.
New birth logo represents the Jews. Zion order, he knows the truth. Death by rock to hit Goliath with. And rub him on the head of your shitty dick. Offering plate, big mistake. He'll lie to you so you pay for his coke case. On his stone, massaging boys while you get your praise on. Birds of a feather flock together. It's all a scheme to push the gay agenda. Frank Skeen sub dick, George Bush sub dick. Eddie fuck with T.I. and Ludacris. Tommy Lee fuck Luda, a house nigga. They love asshole and they don't want women. Tell the truth to your congregation. Niggas blind to the path of pimp relation.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long. Why you got that wig on?
Man, this thing got a wig on.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
I bet that nigga got a thong on.
Eddie Long, Eddie Long. Paying boys for the dome.
Man, do y'all hear this shit?
Eddie Long, Eddie Long.
Man, this shit fucked up, man. Damn.
Why you got that spandex on?
This nigga got a motherfucking spandex,
man.
God said.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because I read your piece, and actually CNN, they have a piece that just came out on Friday from Mr. L.Z. Granderson, Why No Prayers for Bishop Long's Accusers. And just I'm reading from what's on CNN. It says that Mr. Granderson is a 2010 nominee and a 2009 winner of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. What I've seen in the way that the Bishop Long story has been reported is that a significant number of the stories are not necessarily focused on Bishop Long is accused of pedophilia, sexual misconduct. What I've seen is the black church is not accepting of homosexuality. I guess I wanted to add two questions around that. Number one, has that been your observation in the way that this incident has been reported?
Yes, and to be fair, I've participated in that, in the, many of the articles, the AJC article, Christian Science Monitor, several other articles, and focusing on that, and some of my comments on CNN on when I was on. So, yeah, I have definitely participated in focusing that. But I guess it's because they were 16. The allegations claim that they were 16 and over, and in Atlanta, it's not it's considered that's the age of consent. So that's probably why it's not been branded as pedophilia.
Very interesting. And this is going to pop back up when we get to Erotic Revolutionary. This will pop back up about those the age of sexual consent and the social construction of how we view sex and what gets viewed as rape or what gets viewed as pedophilia and what gets viewed as normal, healthy sexual activity. But, yeah, that has been very interesting to me in the way that this story has been reported in terms of just the black church is not accepting of homosexual behavior. And you said yourself you've participated in some of this.
I think that's the major story.
I'm sorry?
I think that's the major story.
What's the major story?
The fact that the black church culture that's resistant against homosexuality because now Eddie Long's ministry is about to explode. One of the biggest churches, one of the most prominent preachers is potentially on his way down because the church is completely intolerant of homosexuality from its leaders. And so that's why, to me, that's the big part of the story, the fact that one of the most prominent preachers is on his way to the poorhouse.
Interesting. Very interesting. My perspective on this is that I think it is a sad indicator of just how bad things are when someone is accused, a 55-year-old is accused of engaging in sexual intercourse with a 16-year-old, and people are not furious about this and saying this is totally incorrect. People are upset and saying, why aren't black people more accepting of homosexual activity? I feel like that should be the main thing that we're upset about, and I think that should be the case even if these were females. It shouldn't be any different. I would be furious if my 16-year-old daughter were engaging in sexual intercourse with a 55-year-old male. I would be furious. I would be outraged. That person should be under the jail, which is the exact same way I think it should be if it's a male, female, totally incorrect. If Eddie Long was a female and the accusers were males, totally incorrect. I would be livid, and I just find it very interesting that that's not the primary focus of the story, the incorrectness of this activity. Not black people should be more accepting of homosexual behavior, and specifically the black church. And this is a consistent theme that I have seen in the media going all the way back to California and the vote that they had on gay marriage. Again, it was black people are not accepting of homosexual activity, which I think is real interesting. Have you observed that similar thing?
Definitely. But I guess I think there's some truth to that, though. I think that when you look at the national data, I think in the CNN article I quoted the Pew Research Center's recent study, blacks tend to be more theologically conservative, tend to be more Bible-affirming, and tend to be less likely to accept homosexuality as a lifestyle. So that kind of translates into when, like in California, when more blacks came out to vote for Obama, it means more Bible-affirming people are going to come out, and it probably is going to cause that initiative to be able to be instilled against gay marriages. So I think I do agree with you that it shouldn't just be the focus. But with Long in particular, though, a guy who spent so much time brilliantly preaching against homosexuality, there is sort of a certain dynamism to the fact that now his ministry is about to crumble for those same kind of erotic urges that he's been kind of shooting down. So I think that's what kind of gives the story kind of a national bite to it, kind of intrigue. And journalists, their job is to create intrigue, to deal with national issues. A male pastor, it's so common that male pastors abuse young women that it's almost not a story, which is sad. But, like, powerful men abusing, sleeping with women, whether it's the church, whether it's in any facet, any institution, is such a normal, such a regular thing that it's not a national story when it happens all the time. Unless it's President Clinton with his intern or something like that.
I would assert that is social engineering, an excellent illustration of social engineering, what gets reported and what does not get reported. The fact that if, you know, a pastor commits sexual abuse against 16-year-old females or 15-year-old females, 17-year-old females, that's not really a story. I would say that is social engineering, that people don't really perceive anything to be that incorrect about that. And conversely, if it is a story, that a 55-year-old male commits sexual molestation against a 16-year-old male, that is a story. And especially if the story is not, whoa, this is really incorrect. The story is, how ironic is this? And the black church is not accepting of homosexuality. I think that's brilliant illustration of social engineering and how the media can provide context for how we think about sex, which, again, big thing. We're going to come back to this. I'm just highlighting this so you all will keep it in mind when we get to erotic revolutionaries. I guess this is important for the context of this discussion. What is your sexual classification, if I may ask?
Heterosexual.
Okay. Curious.
That's like exactly what I see with the way that the news has been covering what happened with Eddie Long. Did you see they had on CNN, they had one segment where Don Lemon, he's a non-white male,
mm-hmm.
he was doing a report with three
Don
members.
Don Lemon said that he was molested.
Yep.
That's wrong to suspect it, then. That's why he has that job.
Why do you say that?
That's who they give jobs to if they can do it. You know, I understand one of the first, Max Garden, Max Robinson.
Who was that?
You ever heard of Max Robinson?
No, sir.
He was one of the first black guys, if not the first black guys, that was on CNN. But, you know, the rumor is that he, you know, he was real masculine, had a real heavy voice. You know, nothing effeminate about him at all on the surface, but I understand that's what he was, a homosexual. That's why they gave him the job. And that's the rumor, and I've heard it from all kinds of sources. He's dead now. Max Robinson. First black anchor. White people used to make jokes about him. But, you know, behind the scenes at the station. That nigga's a queen, you know.
Wow.
But he had a full image of total masculinity. Max, when you say, even his name, see, Max, was a lot of black males, you know, traditionally. Going way back, I started noticing it years ago that a lot of you know, black males are raised by their mothers, so they give them feminine names. Because their mothers are female, see, they ain't named by their fathers because their fathers took off. So, you know, they get names like Adrian, you know, feminine names. But whoever Max Robertson's parents were, they named him what you gave him, you know, Max Robertson, like Mad Max, you know. Among Germanic people, see, I mean, they believe in that masculine strength and feminine strength.
Mm-hmm.
Female's a female and male is a male. That's why among Germans you got all those strong names, like Wolfgang, you know. I mean, you're going to name a boy Wolfgang, you know. Eric Wolfgang Strongheim. Man, he's ready to go to war. Right out of the womb. But see, you, among black people, you name the girl Tracy and name the boy Tracy, too. It's crossover names. But some names, I mean, like Max. Hey, you know, you don't name no girl Max. Maxine. Add that I-N-E. A lot of names that end in E, I mean, are feminized. Sometimes they spell it a little different. If it's a boy, it's Tracy, but it ends in Y. If it's a girl, it's T-R-A-C-I-E. In French, I mean, you know, that E, I mean, denotes femininity. Leslie, you know, a lot of girls named Leslie. A lot of boys named Leslie, too.
Yes, I've met quite a few Leslies that are boys.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. They're crossover names. And females, if they name a child, they have a tendency, you know, particularly black females, they don't want too much of a masculine name on the boys because it's a threat to white people. That's a subliminal thing. If you're a 6-foot dark skinned black male coming on the job and his name is Bruce, you know, he's not likely to get it as fast as a guy named Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subtle thing, you know. Particularly if Adrian comes across as, you know, kind of, you know, low-key and obedient and submissive and girlish. That's why in the movies they always want every black male, particularly if he really looks masculine, to do at least one movie where he puts on a dress. And the record shows that. Go right down the list of black males who are movie stars. There's some evidence right there. They haven't gotten Denzel Washington to do it yet. That's why most of your black sports stars, not most, I'd say a substantial number. I mean, when they start bringing in a whole bunch of them, I mean, particularly on the football field, they're the ones with the earrings.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the white guys got them, but I mean, but overall, the black male is almost like a part of the uniform.
I saw
the
one
earpiece,
of
the earpiece. I mean, you know, you gotta come across as that. See, now what that is, that goes back to the Roman Empire, because they used to put earrings in the eunuchs that were guarding the harem.
Mm.
course, they didn't wear just little earpieces, little diamond studs like they do now. That's just a little minor symbolism. But they had the big hoop earrings, you know. Like women, you know, and a great big turban on their head with a ruby in the center. And they're standing there, you know, with a big sword, guarding the arrow, because they were castrated. That's just a holdover from the same thing, and anything dealing with sports, because that's what they used the black males for back in the Roman Empire, for sports. You know, they were gladiators in the Colosseum. We'll have you fighting the lions or each other, but you will fight us, you know.
I saw one of the victims who had made the allegations against Bishop Long. He had two earrings. That was one of the first things I saw when they put him on TV. He had holes in both ears.
Feminized. See, and black males, see, they don't know. See, they don't know. That's why I say we don't know, understand white supremacy. We walk around saying, hey, you know, this is the style, man. Hey, but you know, I have a block away. Nobody can tell you from a female. You ever stop to think about that? You're getting all them extensions and whatnot. You look just like a female a block away. A guy come running down the block, I mean, thinking he's going to meet somebody. You know? You get up close and say, oh, that's a dude. I'm fixing to say something to this chick, you know? And back in the 1970s, see, they had black guys in high-heeled shoes and them tight pants and whatnot, you know? That style didn't come out of nowhere. See, that's the white supremacists playing this stuff. Right after the riots, all of a sudden, they put black males in platform shoes and then real tight pants with no pockets, you know? Then they start having to put everything into a shoulder bag because that's what black males was carrying.
In the 70s?
In the 70s. You know, a lot of black males had shoulder bags because you didn't have no pockets in them old flare pants. Them pants just flare down at the bottom like sailor's pants. You know? And
the bell bottoms.
Yeah, the bell bottoms. Okay. You didn't, none of those stingy pockets you had, you couldn't put nothing in them. And you didn't have no hip pockets at all. But your pants was real tight on your hips. They're super fly. Look at some of them old photographs.
Wow.
It jumps right out at you. Great big hat with a feather in it. Flare at the bottom. And the females are wearing the same thing, you know, like some of them Spanish cartoons in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, flare down at the bottom. Females got them on, males got them on. Ruffles. You know, a shirt with ruffles. That's the Superfly image. And it came out in the 1970s, right after the 1968 riots, when black people were tearing up everything. See, we're going to pacify them, feminize them. Put earrings in their ears. Have them sitting up in the beauty parlor. That's where the unisex thing came from. They kind of faded out now.
The unisex thing? What is that?
Well, the unisex barbershops and whatnot. See, for a brief period, both males and females were going in some places to what you call the unisex barbershops. In other words, the guy sitting in there getting their hair all done up, I mean, and them jerry curls and whatnot, and a woman sitting right next to him. He's sitting up there doing girl talk. See, but black males kind of, you know, for one thing, it wasn't commercially. It didn't, you know, that idea didn't go over. Because, see, black males believe in their barbershops, you know. I mean, you know, the barbershop is a male thing. Black barbershops traditionally, and black beauty parlors are the same way. That's where the, you know, black females get together and do their gossip and whatnot. And they don't particularly care for males coming in there. So that unisex thing, as far as beauty parlors and barbershops, it didn't fly very well. So they kind of faded, except for the people who call themselves homosexuals. There's a few of them around. But see, but that didn't work because it meant male and female, you know. Homosexuals don't want to be around no real women unless they're doing their hair, you know. You want to be around fellas, you know. Some of them sit around females all the time because they pick up points, you know. Whole idea is trying to upstage female, you know. That's why back in the old days, I mean, a guy who was homosexual would say, I'm more woman than you ever be.
Wow. That goes right in line with the eunuchs that you were talking about. Is his name Max Robinson?
Yeah.
The anchor and Don.
Like
Leonard?
I said, I don't have confirmation on that, and,
mm-hmm.
But that was the rumor at the time.
Mm-hmm. And Don Lemon, that seems to go right hand in hand. White people selecting black male.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's just kind of common knowledge that, you know, if they say, hey, we got to hire a minority, we got to hire a black person today, and two males show up, the one that's effeminized is the one who's going to get the job, most likely. If it's not a job that requires, you know, a whole lot of, like, muscular strength or something like that, you know, if they want somebody digging ditches or something like that, well, hey, then that's a shoe-in. The black guy might get the job faster than the white guy because they can work him hard, you know. But if it's going to be something like an office job, something like that, you know, no, yeah, you know, get that effeminate black guy if you're going to put him in there with all these women, wouldn't I? And all these other white guys, you know, and the white guys who are already that way, I mean, hey, you know, they can hook them up with them. They get a twofer on that one. See, but you get a real masculine black guy in his office with all these white women and all these other white men, now you got competition. See what I mean? And you got a tense situation, too. Potentially explosive, because he's going to be walking around here acting like a real man, which means he'll be in your face too.
Yeah.
Most likely be a troublemaker, you know, rather than an asset. The effeminate black male will usually be very efficient, won't give nobody no whole lot of trouble. If you pair him off with somebody, I mean, he's happy. Pair him off with one of the other white males who is of the same anti-sexual persuasion. He's not a threat as far as the females is concerned because he'll get along with them marvelously. They'll sit around, you know, and make small talk about the soap opera. You know.
Hmm.
And the females like that because he's not a Negro threat, you know.
Do you have an opinion on why the white people at CNN allowed or maybe even instructed Don Lemon to make that declaration to let everybody know that he'd also been sexually molested as a child? Do you have a view on why they wanted him to be there?
Well, people might have been asking questions all along. Well, now he's probably been asked these questions. See, Don Lemon is no threat. I mean, he's like the type of guy everybody get along with. You know, mild mannered, Nothing like a mild-mannered black person around white folks. Because, you know, the image of black males is that black males are, man, they ain't, you know, particular, hey, you know, you're going to be, you know, black male, a hip-hop black male, I mean, you know, dark shades and whatnot, I mean, that nigga might do anything. Jump up and start shooting. That's just the way it is. Always has been. Some things change, some things don't. Usually the changes are just, you know, cosmetics. Fundamentals are still there. Have to be. You're going to have a system of racism.
Have you noticed that pattern of, I guess, the lack of sexual discipline with non-white people? It seems like a lot of times non-white people who are attempting to do something constructive, that sex thing botches it, the allegations against...
It's because of the assertion of the need to be masculine and in a way to not only be masculine but to be a man, see, in a way that the system of white supremacy keeps telling the black male, you ain't gonna, ain't only one man in this house. Ain't gonna be no two. And the man in the house is gonna be white. And that's what the white supremacists say to black males, directly or indirectly, repeatedly. Only one man in the house now, you know. And the house is the planet. There's one man on the planet. One at a time, and I'm it. Now, you can choose between two other categories, boy or girl. Take your choice. I don't care which. But you ain't going to be no man, not on my planet. Get that straight right up front. That's the basic message. I mean, to say it in simplistic, straightforward terms so that everybody wants to get some clarity. That's an excellent way of putting it. On this planet, there's just going to be one man, and he's going to be white. Now, all you dark-skinned people, all you people classified as non-white who are male, that leaves you two other choices. You can become effeminized, and if you're going to remain in the masculine category, you're going to be a boy when I'm around. In circumstances where, you know, that calls for a man's position, you're going to be a boy. There's only one man in this house. And you can, even if you're not girlish, you at least act like you're a girl, or you act like you're a boy. But you're not going to act like a man on my planet, period. Not going to have manly characteristics, you know. Now, if you tend to do that, if you're going to keep your masculinity, you're still not going to be a man, because I'm going to put you in the category of being a brute. Some type of wild creature. You still have your masculinity, but as a wild creature. So you know, put some stuff on you, make you look like you're wild. When you walk down the street, you look like you're, you know, something that's lost its mind. Some type of monster. Because all black people in the system of white supremacy, to use other terms, I mean synonyms for other terms, monsters and monstrosities. I've been saying that for years. And I tell people, I'm a monstrosity, Jim. See, now I'll be a monster when I start doing things like this. Everywhere I go, I tear up something. You have to lock me up. See, I'm breaking in cars or whatnot, or turning them over, you know, or fighting every 15 minutes, you know, going to a classroom, and there ain't going to be no class. I'm going to disrupt everything, you know. Ain't going to study. See, that's a monster. That's monster behavior. See? Now, if I show any signs of sanity, then I'm a monstrosity because I cannot express my sanity in any kind of competitive mode with a white supremacist. That makes me a monstrosity. So black people come up in that category, monsters and monstrosities. That would be in the expanded version of the book. I mean, that's another way of putting it. But it's the same fundamental thing. You know, you have to come across as being in a weakened position, either as a monster in a cage, and if you're outside the cage, then it's some type of tamed animal. These are the two categories that we are allowed. He's an animal, but he's tame. See what I mean? We got some wild horses, and we got some tame horses. You put it in that frame of reference. They're horses. They're not real people. Some of them are wild, some of them are tame. The tame ones, we just let them, you know, just wander around, you know, because they're tame. These are saddle horses. The ones that are still running wild and all like that, you put fences around them. See? They're not disciplined. Put them in cages. Watch them all the time. You know, I'd be out there tromping all over the garden. See, now, in a biblical way, Samson was known, and a lot of people have heard this story either directly or indirectly. His strength was in his hair. And so among white people and black people, I mean, you know, hair has always been a big thing among all societies and whatnot. And this is why you have black males now very easily. Because, see, like I said, the white supremacists are master psychologists. See, they will associate strength with hair. That's why they will go out and get extensions. And we can very easily guide them in that direction where that becomes a real important thing. And then they get into a contest over a period of time. One guy's extensions is just a little below the collar. So the next guy said, well, hey, more is better. So his extension's now halfway down his back. And then the guy said, well, more is better. Now he's got them all the way down to the back of his shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then if more is better, now, since you can't have to be dragging it on the ground, you wrap it around his waist.
Okay.
See, it's, we don't know when to stop. No one automatic. We don't know what to do with ourselves. So what you're doing now is paying for a whole bunch of stuff to put on your head that functionally is just something collecting dust. A whole lot of it. You're walking around with a whole lot of mops attached to each other. It's not even a natural part of your body. A form of insanity. Because it's that need to, I'm the great I am. well, what is it that you are? I don't know, but I'm going to be something. That's why I don't like that expression, be all that you can be. No, you don't want to be everything that you can be. That's one of the craziest things ever thought of. Be all that you can be. You going to be a pig? I mean, you know. I mean, sometimes we just don't know what we're saying. You know, we need to pay attention to what we say. Because what we say has a lot to do with how we think. Be all that you can be. There used to be a song by that title. I mean, be anything. What kind of expression is that? No, I ain't going to be anything now. I mean, man, when you sober up, that's the first thing you say. Be anything. No, I ain't going to be anything, man. I mean, you know, some half-drunk guy in the barbershop will say that. I ain't going to be anything, man. You know. I might be something, but I ain't going to be anything. Be, you know, be what people left in the outhouse. I mean, you know. No, you don't send that kind of message. Don Corleone told Fontaine, what can I do, what can I do? He said, you can be a man, that's what you can do. That's a message there.
Last week's episode was hilarious. I have seen a lot of racist white supremacist films, television programs. I've even read some racist white supremacist books that I have found humorous. So I don't have a problem laughing at something that I know is promoting racism, white supremacy. Last week's episode was hilarious. The satire was right on. If you look at some of the photographs that are flashing by that are from last week's program, I mean, it was pretty funny. I laughed a lot. I've watched it several times. It was hilarious. But, or actually, I'll rewind from my butt. Let me say this first. I think that it's probably one of the best critiques of Tyler Perry or criticisms of Tyler Perry that I've seen. I think it does a really good job of just showing how redundant the films are. I mean, I've only seen like two Tyler Perry films, and they were excruciating to watch. That's why I haven't done any breakdowns of Tyler Perry films, because I can't watch those films. When I tried, it was like an all-day effort to try to watch. Like, I had to watch 20 minutes, stop, take a break, go outside, breathe. Like, it was torture to watch his work. And it's baffling to me that people will pile into buses and drive hours and spend lots of money to go and see all of these films. And I mean, it's just, it really speaks to the pitiful condition of black people in a system of white supremacy that Tyler Perry has become a $500 million enterprise. At any rate, I thought it was a great critique of Tyler Perry's work and really exposing how silly the work is, and exposing we're really promoting homosexual activity and gayness, having a black male dressed up like a woman every film. I felt it did a fantastic job. I spoke with Back of the Bus about this earlier, and he said that he had heard people discussing last week's episode and speaking against Tyler Perry and saying, yeah, I do think this is gay to have a black male in a dress. I do think this is gay. I do think this is really incorrect. So that maybe could be constructive. Maybe. I'll even give him the photograph reminded me. I think one of the great things that the program did is that it really made you keep in mind that the Tyler Perry films, in addition to having this, you know, great big joke about this black male being in a dress, they really push a lot of Christianity And when Dr. Ashanti was on the program in February, shout out a listener in Canada, black female, she said that was one of her favorite programs with Dr. Ashanti. He said that the church does more to emasculate and castrate black males than anything else. He said that on the program. Go back and listen to it, because he did say it and he explained why. But I felt last week's episode of the Boondocks did a great job of knotting those two. If you look, one of the photos flashing by, it has white Jesus and Tyler Perry in his dress, and he explains, he said he's talking to God, and Jesus said, yeah, it would be great, you could get a lot of people in if you cross-dress. I thought that was excellent imagery of having the white person there to okay this and say, yes, this is something that should be done, this will be great, and definitely in a system of white supremacy, Tyler Perry wouldn't exist if white people did not permit him to do this, if they didn't allow it and, in my view, encourage it by making sure that everyone has access to it. I know there are a lot of other black films that I think are constructed that you will not have as easy a time accessing as Tyler Perry's works. Spook Who Sat by the Door for one, Mr. Fuller's work for two, Dr. Welsing's work for three. You will not have as easy a time getting your hands on their work as you will a Tyler Perry movie. But even with that, those, and I see the photograph again. I think that is great. I think that is fantastic, having that image of Jesus, white Jesus, next to Tyler Perry, and he's leaning on Jesus through the whole episode to justify and sanction what he's doing. I thought that was great. Even with all that, it's still, I was thinking, number one, it's really easy to beat up on black people. It's really easy to beat up on black males.
Double whammy.
I have heard a ton of people fuss about Tyler Perry. I've heard a ton of people say it's incorrect, that they don't think the dresses. I've seen articles in the Washington Post. This is not, you know, brand new to come out and have an indictment of Tyler Perry. White people are not going to be jumping out to his defense. Spike Lee has come out and chastised him. It's not really new. I just think it was a creative way of doing it. But the fact that he leaped on Tyler Perry in the episode leaps on Tyler Perry in this manner, I felt it could have been just an easy way of airing more homosexual content. And I mean, there's a ton of homosexual content in this program. I'll play another clip so if I can get through this quickly and get folks on the line here. This is second clip from last week's episode.
Granddad, snap out of it.
Ow! Damn it!
Ow!
Nigga, have you lost your damn mind?
Granddad, you've been brainwashed. You've been sucked into some bizarre homoerotic Christian theater cult.
Yeah, you was about to kiss that dude, no homo.
Boy, I'm just acting. I know it's a homoerotic Christian theater cult, but if it gets me into Hollywood, who cares? It can't be worse than Scientology.
Do you really want to be famous that bad?
Yes. My whole life I've been normal. Normal sucks. I want women half my age to throw themselves at me. I want people to treat me better than they treat other people. And Riley was right. I don't have much time left. Maybe it's a stupid dream, but this is the last chance I'm going to get at it. Remember that TV show Fear Factor when they made people eat goat rectums and monkey testicles or whatever else to win the big prize? Well, this is my Fear Factor, and Mount Duke is my monkey testicle. And I really want the big prize, even if it means kissing a man. No homo. And when you get home, go in my clean underwear drawer. There should be $200 in quarters. That should be enough to get you through the week, and I'll be home soon, okay?
All right, Granddad. If this is really what you want, we'll get out of here. Enough with that.
That's clip number two from last week's episode. I did appreciate that aspect of it. I felt like they did an excellent job of illustrating how, in a system of white supremacy, it's really easy to manipulate black people to coerce them to do anything you want, really, in a system of white supremacy. That came out yesterday when Dr. Martin Kevorkian was on the program and we were breaking down the film Live and Let Die. And there's a black male in that film who tells James Bond, for $20, I'll take you to a Klan meeting. And he says it with a smile. That clip that just aired, you have granddad saying, you know, kissing Madea, this is, you know, my fear factor. This is, you know, me eating monkey testicles and anything else so that I can be famous and not mistreated as a black male in a system of white supremacy and so that I can have sexual access. He says that in the film, and actually he says he wants a white woman that looks like Linda Carter, who played Wonder Woman way back when. I had to Google that to find out who that was, but yeah, she played Wonder Woman way back when. And that is non-white people in a system of white supremacy. It is easy to manipulate us into doing anything, and I've heard this a lot. If you want to be successful in the so-called entertainment field, I think Mr. Fuller says this, you know, keep that in mind. If you want to be successful in entertainment, you're most likely going to have to be a monster or monstrosity. Halle Berry, Denzel Washington in Training Day, Forrest Whitaker, we discussed yesterday with Last King of Scotland, Martin Lawrence. I mean, you can run the list. Matter of fact, just go back and listen to the program with Dr. Baruti when he was here in February, Feminization of the African Male. But yeah, it's really easy, and I appreciated that they did pull that out. In fact, I'll go ahead and play the last sound clip because it's relative to this.
Robert, you are amazing. Jesus and I were so pleased.
Don't give me that bush. This is the big prize. Where are the Alicia Keys? Where are the Beyoncé's? Where's Wonder Woman? All I see is Florida Evans's. I can get a big bitch on my own. I had to kiss you on stage in front of everybody, and all I get is them mud ducks out there? That wasn't the deal.
Robert, Jesus never said it would happen overnight.
Well, how long do I have to suck lips with you before the women out there become hot?
Look, Robbie, I've just sold Marduk Finds Herself a Man as a movie. And guess who's my leading man?
Really? I'm going to be in a movie? Oh.
That's right, Bob. And I only have one request. Look, man, all bullshit aside, can I please just have some ass?
Okay. Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you made up this whole cross-dressing Christian cult crap just so you can sleep with men?
Pretty much, yeah.
You. Now stick that up your ass. No homo.
Man. Number one, I appreciated that, Granddad says, okay, when he asks, he says, okay, it's easy. Once you have accepted, it's, again, University of Virginia, double major in psychology and history, minor in African-American studies. White people do studies for people who join sororities and fraternities. When you go through that hazing process and get beat on and humiliated, a lot of that stuff is kind of homoerotic too. When you go through all that, you have to rationalize it to yourself. You don't want to sound like a fool. It's kind of similar to the sad rationalization of non-white people who are in sexual relationships with white people and the way that they have to rationalize, no, this white person is not a racist. No, that's incorrect. It's kind of the same thought process. So once you go through all this, you kiss somebody, kissed a man on stage and all this other foolishness, you have to justify it. And once you've justified it once or twice, it just becomes easier to go along with it. And so I thought that was great that Granddad just says, okay, when he asks, and then it takes him a second to be like, wait a minute, what is going on here? I also want to make sure I don't forget that previous clip when Granddad tells Huey and Riley to go home and go in his underwear drawer and get a roll of quarters. He has $200 in quarters that should get them through the week. I also thought that was homoerotic because $200 in quarters, I assume they would be in a roll to be digging through someone's underwear drawer for rolls of quarters. Kind of homoerotic. Yeah, you can think about that. I could be incorrect, but I think that's also homoerotic.
I want to just make a statement that, you know, look at the title for this movie, for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow will do. That stood out to me because what is the gay and lesbian symbol? The rainbow.
Rainbow. Oh, really?
What message, does it send? You know, it says, hey, the movie says your man doesn't, all he wants you is as a physical tool. He doesn't want your children, you know, and side, but hey, the rainbow is here, and the rainbow will do. You know, come to the other side. You know, because it's gonna. All it's doing is, I was thinking earlier when you guys were talking, you know, and I was saying this movie. I was saying to myself anyway, this movie is simply another nail in the coffin of black male female relationship, and this is. And I think we're gonna see a many more series of these in the next several years. Because you know the pace is stepping up.
Right. I'm
also adding that you know Frederick Douglass said something I'll never forget in his book, My Bondage, My Freedom, is that human nature is so constituted that it can pity a man, but even this it can you know even this it can only do for a you know period of time if signs of strength do not arise. And I think that you know even though we are worthy of pity, as Mr. Neely Fuller says. We're not getting any pity anymore, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Because we're not showing any signs of strength. And that, you know, our pity has run out, and it's time for us to stand up. I will not go see this movie either. However, I may get a bootleg copy. I encourage if anybody wants to see it to support your local bootlegger, you know. Only for movies such as this. And,
yeah.
It's a great show, and thanks again for you guys' comments. I'm going to mute my phone since I'm reading so far.
That was a great point you made about the rainbow. I didn't even think of, I didn't even make that connection. That is, that's deep.
Yes, it is.
Outstanding.
Symbolism.
I was thinking of Irritated Genie when he said that lesbianism is the physical manifestation of the feminist ideology. And I was thinking, you're looking at it again, right here. I almost got the photograph of all of the females together, and I was like, wow, this is us coming together. No black males, just a big group of black females, and everybody's happy and complaining about black males. This looks really gay. Outstanding
and they're all
point, sir.
On each other.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, the white folks will be packing the movie theaters as usual just to see another dysfunctional black movie.
That's right.
Where we bash each other, as they did right. with Precious, The Blind Side, and all of the other dysfunctional, just for them to get off. Like I was telling one of my bloggers, I said if Tyler Perry does not have the cross-dressing grandmother with the gun talking trash. And all of these men who have issues, because in all of his movies, the men have issues. And the women also have issues, but more so it's always on the men's side. They don't have a job. There's something wrong with them. And this is what encourages these white people, because it feeds on them, because they feel that we, as a people, we are dysfunctional. So they go and they crowd to these movies, and it comes back, and they feel good. Like I thought all along, these people, they can't do any better.
And if you could you finish your statement about your thoughts that she said she was gay and she said she was happy and you felt that was by white supremacist design. If you could perhaps maybe wrap up and if you could explain that thoroughly for us so we all
get
an understanding.
I mean, you know, once you get the non-white person in a state of mind and a viewpoint of life, of what life should be about for them, you know, as a victim, I mean, there's an old adage. I mean, there's nothing better than having a happy slave. That's a perfect situation. A slave that's walking around grumpy all the time, man, is dangerous. I mean, and any slave master going all the way back through history, I mean, will tell you whether, you know, you're talking about the Roman Empire or you're talking about a plantation slave owner in Louisiana. They will sell a grumpy slave down the river first time they get a sale. And then one thing they don't want the rumor to get out. Now, this slave is always grumpy, always complaining about everything, don't like nothing, don't like the food, don't like the plantation, can't stand the master. But the slave that's playing that banjo and kicking up his heels and think he's in heaven, that's the one we want to keep. A grumpy slave might slip up behind you any dark night with an axe.
Well, I assume our caller, it seemed like from what you were saying on the phone, she doesn't think white supremacy is that much of a problem. She said she was happy. I assume white supremacy.
And another thing, I just want to interject this. That was very important, but she wouldn't let me get that word in. If she's already happy with the way everything is, then why bother with having these kind of conversations at all? See what I mean?
Yes, sir.
I wrote my book only for people who say that they are victims.
Mm-hmm.
It says right on the cover. I've run into dozens of people who say, I'm not a victim. I say, well, then the book is not for you.
Mm-hmm.
If racism doesn't affect you, that you don't have no problem with it or nothing like that, it's nothing in this book for you.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the only suggestion I have for you is to teach other people how you were able to pull it off.
Mm.
You're a black person and you've never been victimized by racism, and if you were victimized, you came up with a way of dealing with it that really worked for you. I said you should do, you know, what the code says that every person should do to find themselves in that golden position. Teach other people exactly how you did it, all the steps that you took. And I said, and you can start with me.
If being so-called homosexual is a part of that process, I think I'm going to have to pass and find
out. No, I'm going to pass on that part.
Yeah,
see what I mean?
Because
that's a part of the racist conspiracy. I've already decided that. See, so if they come to me, well, Fuller, if you really don't want to deal with racism and be happy and get all kind of benefits, which he mentioned benefits,
yes,
and all like that, and go on and live your life,
mm-hmm.
then, Fuller, you've got to become a homosexual. And then I say, no. Because that's a part of their plot.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a part of mine.
Mm.
You know, no, I'm not doing that, you know. Yeah, I know about the benefits that go with that. I've seen it.
Mm.
But are they really benefits? You know, what does it, and I have this written in some of my notes, what does it matter to gain the whole world and have to give up your gender? Okay.
Mr. Fuller, you
yes,
as an individual, you, are you happy in your life?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and
because
see, that's
I'm
the
not
difference.
Supposed to be.
That's the difference, sir. I am, as some people in this chat room describe me, and I'm sure these people are black. I know they are, and very, you know, not politically correct terms describing my ethnicity. Which is unfortunate, and this just proves my point right here. But and they think I'm lost, but they're proving my point right here in the chat room. But that's fine. I don't care what you want to call it. Okay.
Oh, you're not supposed to if you don't have a problem.
No, sir. So let me just finish my point. My point is
okay.
is that despite this racism that exists in society, I'm saying I am happy in my life. And I don't I socialize with anyone. I don't care what race you are. Because I know there are good white people, I know there are good black people, I know there are bad people of all different races. And I've always been like that.
Wait a minute, you say something else though. You say that you're a female and that you're gay, correct?
Yes, I am.
Now,
which should be another shot against me, right? I should be angry.
No.
I should be like, oh my God, I can't have these benefits. And I'm not that way.
According to the code, that means that the white supremacists have done their job.
All right. Hey, their job works for me. Thank you, white supremacists.
Yes, that's a very important. And you say that you're. Wait a minute, hold it. And you say that you're happy.
I am, and that's the truth. I'm
absolutely, happy. Absolutely, absolutely. And that fits the old-fashioned description of gay. Now,
and what should be done with
black
folks?
Okay,
black
people
for them, with them, about them.
It's very simple. Very simple. They need to learn how to get power and freedom. I'll say it again. They need to learn how to get power and freedom. And there is one way, and from as far as I'm concerned, only one way to get it. And that is money.
Money.
M-O-N-E-Y,
okay.
Period. That is the only way.
Okay, so how do you get
freedom?
How do you get
power.
This money? Oh, wait a minute. Power. What do you mean when you say power? Let's get that clear.
Okay, power to do what you want to do, and the freedom to do what you want to do. This has nothing to do with being gay, but let me just explain something to you. When I graduated from college, I worked for a record company for about 6 years. And in working for the record company, you know, I learned a lot. I you know, it was a dream come true. I wasn't necessarily doing what I wanted to do. I worked in pretty much A&R, but for those 6 years, you know, it was great. I made, pretty good money. And I was subsequently fired from the position. And, of course, it was to me at that time, it was the end of my world. I was like, I can't believe this has happened to me. But it was a blessing in disguise. I'd made a connection with an executive who was working with the company that I was fired from. And the executive what you would call a big wig with Sony BMG. And he actually brokered a deal for me that paid me $2 million for about 12 songs that I'd written and recorded when I was about 18. So I sold all my publishing. And, you know, I'm sitting in the boardroom with all of these people. I signed a contract, my full name, in 87 different places. And it was just overwhelming and surreal. All I could think about was what I was going to buy. That's all I could think about. And this executive was in the room with, I think, his boss when the biggest wig of them both pushed the check over to me and told me, this is what he told me. This is a white man. Both of these men were white. He told me, he who has the gold makes the rules. Here is your first bar of gold. And he smiled. I told my grandpa about it. And he said, well, you have to understand that you are now part of, I think my grandfather said the 1 or 2% of America, because I think only 1 or 2% of Americans are so-called rich or millionaires. So 2% of the population has control of 98% of the money and economics that happen and all of the goings-on in this country. All I could think about was what I was going to buy, and I went to Tiffany and Company and bought me some, I think, $5,000 or $6,000 earrings, you know, and I went and I bought, you know, a Louis Vuitton messenger bag. I mean, you couldn't tell me anything until I got another offer from the same company. That's how I got here to Atlanta. So now, after the first $2 million, here comes $4 million more for, like, a three-year deal as a ghostwriter. I'm thinking this cannot be real. This cannot be real. Move to Atlanta. I get here, and I'm dumbfounded because I'm seeing black people driving Bentleys. I'm seeing a black woman in a Rolls Royce at Walmart, and I'm. It's just like I was in another world. However, I'm very, you know, I knew that Atlanta was a supposed gay mecca, but I was not in for what I saw when I got here. Gay black people, straight black people, together. Mesh together, and there are no issues. I couldn't understand why. I could not understand why. There were people who were heterosexual who were nicer to me, who were black heterosexuals, than, you know, those people who were gay that I foolishly assumed would be my friends because, you know, we had that gay thing in common. Not to say that all gay people were mean to me, but just a few were questionable. But I couldn't, I just automatically assumed that there was going to be this huge separation in the gay blacks and the straight blacks. But what I found out from, I would probably say 10 people told me, that doesn't matter here. People in Atlanta are worried about their coins. White people in Atlanta and in L.A. and in New York aren't really concerned about who's white and who's black, not saying that there's not any racism because there is, but they're not. They're concerned about their money. There is no, in Atlanta, in the circles that I hang in and the wine tasting parties or whatever I go to or album listening parties that I go to, there is no, you know, oh, my God, he's gay. Well, let's run the other way. And I finally realized what a very famous rapper has realized, which is Jay-Z, that, I mean, truly, when you listen to this saying, I guess, he who has the gold makes the rules. My contract is finished with Sony. I ended my contract about 12 months ago in December, for which, with the gold that I had made, I started my own company. And I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars last year from doing that. So now I don't answer to anyone but myself. I don't think black people really understand that economics and money will solve a lot. When you get to that higher echelon of money that you make, a lot of BS falls to the wayside. That is the point I'm making about black people being so consumed and concerned about something that will never serve them, ever. Ever.
Mm. Context of white supremacy. I want to hop in to ask if Justice has some questions. I'll share my thoughts on what our guest, Mr. Brage, just shared. But before we move on, I do want to say, white people have done a job on us. Mr. Brage, Justice, myself, we all agree that we are in a system of white supremacy. We all agree on that. In a system of white supremacy, a white person gave $1 million to a black male.
$6 million.
The first thing that black. Gave $6 million to a black male, and the first thing they purchased was Tiffany's earrings, plural.
You moved to LA to begin your career in the entertainment industry. You get your gig. Not a full-time gig at first, not really making any money, just staying with a friend. You ultimately get a paying gig, making $27,000 out in L.A., and your white boss, you're at his home, and he asks you, he's going, I believe you said he was going to New Orleans, and
right.
He asks
right.
if you can hook him up with some gay spots, and
right.
You can take it from there. You can take it from there.
Well, I'm mortified because I'm like, what makes him think that I'm gay? And what makes him think that I would know where to hook him up and where to go and just hang out in gay places in New Orleans? So I deny that I'm gay. I deny, you know, knowing that anything that remotely I can be of assistance to helping him do whatever. And he ultimately comes back to me and he says to me, cut the act. He said, I know you're gay. And he said, why do you think I hired you? And even at that moment, I couldn't even be real and honest with myself because I thought, again, it's all about hiding, and I really wanted to climb in the industry, and I never seen anyone openly gay in the entertainment industry except for white men. I never seen any black men who were gay in the entertainment industry, not at that time when I was coming in. And then I was the only black male in my company in that department. So I definitely wasn't going to do what I would say career suicide. So I definitely was like, I don't know what you're talking about, and kept my mouth shut. And I said, and in the book I said this, I said, I have to do a better job at hiding who I am.
Well, have you, I'm just curious, reflecting, have you been able to put the pieces together as to how he was able to pick up that on the fact that you were gay?
I didn't. I never thought about it after that. I didn't talk about women. I don't know. I just don't know. I really don't know. I didn't even think about it until, I mean, you just posed this question.
Oh, something okay.
I never thought of. Yeah. I thought, you know, maybe I'm not doing it, because I was like, I know it's not the way I walk. It's not the way I talk. I don't do anything very extremely overtly effeminate. I don't know. But, I mean, I can be in a room with a whole bunch of women. And even even at this point now, I can go into a room with men and women, and they were like, I just cannot look at you and tell that you're, they're shocked almost, because the ideology of what people, most people think gay is, I don't fit into the ideology. So it's almost like a shock to them.
Wow. I'm just curious because at least it seems like in this, well, I'll ask, so I'm not assuming. Do you think at least in that situation, it started, you were not making any money. Is that accurate? When it first started, you were working?
Yeah, I was, no.
Struggling, you know, just trying to make it, trying to move out to L.A. and didn't even have your own spot. And you ended up getting a paying gig and almost $30,000 for your spot. And even when the job ended, you got severance pay since you were able to get a vehicle. Okay.
Right.
So in this situation, do you think it worked to your advantage that you were gay and that your employee was able to, even though you weren't, you know, out in the open about it, he was able to detect that. Do you think it worked in your, do you think it was a benefit to you in that circumstance?
Yeah, it definitely benefited me. I think, I mean, had I not been gay or, I think it definitely worked to my advantage. But, you know, it's interesting because he's not the first, I mean, when you talk about white supremacy and things like that, and being in the entertainment industry, you'd be amazed how many white men have overtly made passes or advances. And I'm one of those people with, I do that Ray Charles, from the Ray Charles movie, you say you play country dumb. So I'm very good at playing country dumb and get very, like, I don't know, which is like, it seemed like it's going way over my head, very dismissive. Because if you entertain it, I felt, and I said this in the book, once you entertain a thought or what someone's perception of you is, if it could be, or their advance, it leaves the door open. And they'll keep doing it persistently until you respond.
Wow. Now, I just want to make sure, now, it could be me. I could have, you know, not read as carefully. I don't recall that being in the book, what you just said about white people, white males in Hollywood or entertainment making overt, explicit passes. Was that in the book, or did I miss that?
No, I didn't put that in the book, but I'm just saying, in my experience, that has happened to me.
Okay. Now that, wow. That even further supports, I was thinking, I'm not saying, you know, overtly, out of the closet, broadcasting to the world, I'm gay, marching in every, I'm not saying that, but at least if you are willing to participate in homosexual activity, even if you are on the down low, it seems it would be a benefit for you if you're looking to be in entertainment or music. Is that definitely.
Like I said, that definitely is a benefit, because it makes their job less, you know, much easier, because they don't have to work twice as hard. but also it's almost something just – it's almost like a man going after a woman. It's like the prey. If a man – if you're gay, it doesn't – there's no thrill in it for me. Not for me per se, but for someone who's making the advance, there's no thrill in the chase because they know, well, you're going to give it up anyway. So there's no thrill in it. Like there's no I guess no secrecy involved in it. You understand what I'm saying? The difference that I'm saying? Like as a heterosexual man, someone who comes into an office, and someone's making a pass at them, it's almost the thrill of the chase, thinking I can get him. I have to work at it and see where he's going to go with this, and knowing that he may not necessarily be interested in this, but the fact that he'll give it a thought and entertain it makes that more interesting and thrilling and exciting, as opposed to someone who is just gay or maybe on the down. Even down low is even much more secretive, because I know he's going home to a woman. You know, he's living a double life, and I'm the secret. So, it's all about the secrecy. It's not about the openness of it. It's all about the secrecy of it.
Let me see if this fits. You can tell me if I'm correct, if I'm perceiving this correctly. Since you said system of white supremacy exists, you see that in entertainment. Most of the people who are in charge are white people, white males specifically. Let's see how this fits. Would it be accurate to say that if it's a white man and it's a black male, he's looking for a movie part or record deal, whatever, and he presents as heterosexual, he's got a wife or a girlfriend or what have you, it is part of the conquest. Can I bend this person to my will? Can I make them submit to my power, and on
right.
top of that, I get sexual enjoyment out of this because
right.
we'll get to do sex. I get the sexual conquest, and I get to break this person's will, and I get the whole secretive thing. We're all going to be hush hush about this. He's not going
right.
to tell anybody. Just be our little secret. Is that matching up accurately?
Exactly.
Wow. That, in my opinion, I could be incorrect, but in my opinion, that sounds like extremely refined, and I mean some of the worst racism, white supremacy, to have a white person in that position. And you talking about a lot of black people who don't have anything. The example you gave, here's $250,000 in cash advance. What are you willing to do for this? That sounds like some
right.
of the worst racism, white supremacy.
Context of white supremacy. We are done with the audio clips. I hope splicing that information together from all of those different programs, I hope that was helpful. Purpose in doing that, I think non-white people are very confused. I know for myself, it took me a long time to get clarity around exactly what is incorrect about sexual intercourse, so-called homosexuality. It took me a long time to figure out what was incorrect about that and the relationship between this so-called gay rights movement and white supremacy. I hope those clips make it clearer. Folks can chime in when I go to the phone lines. I want to stay on this topic, racism, white supremacy, and so-called homosexuality. When I go to the phone lines, I'm going to play Mr. Edward Williams' commercial so that if this is constructive, people think you can take that last little more than 2 hours of audio and give that to non-white people, black people who are confused about this this so-called gay rights issue. If you can take that to them and play it, and might clear up some of their confusion, A+. I will list all of the folks who are on that clip after I go to the phone lines if people are interested, but I'll give out the listing, and I'll write it in the description so you'll have that information. I guess the last thing I would say would be I could have put a lot more. I could have pulled a lot more from Dr. Baruti and just a lot of people that have been here. I could have pulled more material, and especially the admitted white supremacist known as Tim Wise, and him referencing Dr. Francis Cress Welsing's work as pseudoscientific bullshit centered around her theory that racist man and racist woman are attempting to manipulate non-white people, and particularly black people, into anti-sexual, homosexual behavior, real key. So I could have played a lot more, but I'm pleased with the clips that I got. I'll see how what folks think of it, and I will hit the phone lines. But I do want people to think the last clip was Mr. Terrence Dean, author of Hiding in Hip Hop. He was on the program in November of 2010. Really, really critical bit of information. He says that the suspected racist, his white boss who hired him, knew he was gay, even when he was, you know, doing his best to conceal that, you know, he was engaging in so-called homosexuality. The white person knew it. I think that speaks volume to white people's understanding of their subjects, how they have groomed us to behave. In addition to the white people being involved in the homosexual behavior, I hope that connection between white people and homosexuality, I hope those clips helped drive that connection home as well. I'm going to support counter-racism.com, and once I'm back, I will go to the phone lines. Context of white supremacy, please support, invest, so we can continue the effort to replace white supremacy with justice. We'll be right back after the commercial break.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? At counterracism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Context of white supremacy. Before I go to the phone lines, again, I am not neutral about so-called homosexuality. It is incorrect behavior. It supports the system of racism, white supremacy, and I think non-white people should be adamantly opposed to so-called homosexuality. It is not correct. And I think in particular, black males, I think, as I said, hopefully we'll get some clarity around definition for black masculinity within the context of white supremacy this Sunday when Umar Abdullah Johnson returns to the program. But I think a core component of black manhood should be that just a total opposition to homosexuality. I mean, unless we're comfortable with, you know, Norbit, Big Mama's House, Tyler Perry, I mean, unless we're comfortable, if that's going to be the image of black manhood in the 21st century, unless we're okay with that, I am not. And I think anybody who opposes race and supremacy, that should be done. That should be remnants of when we were under the foot of racist man and racist woman. I did want to read this quick couple lines. This is from a report titled Pederasty and Homosexuality. Pederasty was discussed on the program yesterday with Scott Lively, so-called sexual intercourse between an adult male and an adolescent male. I might even work on getting this gentleman on the program. We'll have to see. Again, his name is David Thorstad. But he says, the issue of love between men and boys has intersected the gay movement since the late 19th century, with the rise of the first gay rights movement in Germany. In the United States, as the gay movement has retreated from its vision of sexual liberation in favor of integration and assimilation into existing social and political structures, it has increasingly sought to marginalize, even demonize, cross-generational love. Pederasty, that is, love, didn't say sex, love between a man and a youth of 12 to 18 years of age, say middle-class homosexuals, lesbians, and feminists, has nothing to do with gay liberation. Some go so far as to claim, absurdly, that it is a heterosexual phenomenon or even sexual abuse. What a travesty. Pederasty is the main form that male homosexuality has acquired throughout Western civilization. I'll just read that once again. Pederasty is the main form that male homosexuality has acquired throughout Western civilization. And not only in the West, pederasty is inseparable from the high points of Western culture, ancient Greece, and the Renaissance. There's more to it. You can hit their website. This is on the NAMBLA.org website. And again, as I said on the program yesterday, NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association, they credit the sexual revolution and the gay rights movement as being a key part of their inspiration for their work to legalize, legitimize sexual intercourse, so-called sexual intercourse between adult males and adolescent males, pedophilia. At any rate, I will hit the phone lines. Again, I would like to stay on topic, and if we can keep the background noise down, that would be great. There are still quite a few people on the phone line, so if you could press 1, that would let me know if you actually wish to speak. That would be helpful. Thank you. So right now, only 2 people have hands up. Everybody else is just listening. The 2 people with hands, well, the folks with hands up and Mr. Nero, I have you 3 on the line. The folks with hands up, okay. Everyone with a hand up, have your line open if you have a hand up.
Hello?
I'm just here. Yes, I can hear you.
You talking to me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, you know what? I didn't really have anything to say. I just want to keep listening to this show because I'm not near a computer.
Oh, okay. I don't know which line.
Can I make one quick comment, though?
Yes, sir.
I just really started listening to the show, like, within the last week, so this is the first time I've ever had a chance to actually hear it live. But I recently heard the one show with the one guy, I can't think of his name, some songwriter dude or whatever from Atlanta. What was his name, like Brady or something like that?
Mr. Brage.
When are you gonna have that guy on again? That dude was hilarious, man. I mean, he was really. I mean, I'm sorry, but I shouldn't say hilarious, but I laughed. I'm sorry, and I really wish I would have been able to call in on that show. I also got to hear the one guy, the Confederate guy.
Mm-hmm. Black, yes, sir. H.K. Edgerton.
Is he ever scheduled to come back to the show? Because, man, those were good shows. I mean, I gotta, I'm going to burn those to CD and let some more friends hear them, you know? They're that good.
Glad you found him to be of value. Mr. Edgerton and Mr. Brage, I don't think they are big supporters of the cows. Mr. Brage deleted his Facebook account, and that was the only means I had of contacting him, so he might not want to be bothered with us anymore. And Mr. Edgerton, he left the program early, so I don't know. He might not want to hang out with us anymore either. So,
did he ever give you any money?
I don't know his real name, so it would be difficult for me to tell, like, unless he left a note or something to identify.
Well, you know, he did give his name over the broadcast. If you listen very clearly, he gave his last name. Towards the end, if you listen, he actually did give his last name. Or at least I think when he was giving his last name. I don't think he realized that, though. So, you know, if people want to go back and listen, I can, but I'm sorry. You know what? You didn't even. I didn't actually have anything to say, but I'm asking you about programs you're not even having. So, can you just leave me on hold so I can continue to listen? Because I'm at work. So.
Oh yeah, no worries. If I may ask really quick, what last name did you hear?
I don't remember what the last name was because I just caught it. I was listening to it when I was at work last night, as a matter of fact, and I would have to go back and listen to it. But I mean, I can go back, and it's somewhere towards the end of the broadcast, and he referred to Mr. He was referring to himself in third person, so I assume he was talking about himself.
Interesting. I appreciate listening exercises, so that'll be a good reason to go back, listen to the program again to pick that information out. So go back, listen to the program A Proud Gay Black Man, January of 2010, and check that out.
It's definitely in the second half, maybe to last quarter of the show, so you can just fast forward through everything else, and, you know, he's getting more and more upset as the show is going on. I mean, for you to say that you're gay first and black second, wow, I mean, that was just amazing. I never heard anybody say that before, you know? That was amazing. I never heard anybody ever say that. I mean, I suspected that, but I've never literally heard anybody say it before, you know? Where do you find these people? I love your show.
That's great. I hope it is helping you understand white supremacy better. The gentleman, he was on the Tater Pie, actually. That was Tater Pie.
Actually, no. What it does do is help me show how confused I really am, which is what you constantly say, you know?
Oh.
If something got these people to where they are. I mean, the Oreo experience actually makes sense a little bit, I guess. I've been listening to all the shows, man, so I'm trying to catch up. But you have so many, it's going to take the... there's the cowbell. You got so many shows. It's gonna, and I'm downloading most shows. It occurred to me today when I happened to go to the Blog Talk site that I saw that you had a scheduled show. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna actually call in. I wrote down the phone number and called it in so I can actually listen to it. But normally I wouldn't be able to listen to it because I'm at work at this time of night pretty much most of the time. So, and the reminder feature didn't work. So I tried to use it, but it wouldn't. I don't know. It didn't work. So. It didn't remind me of anything, so I just remembered it. But either way, good show. I'll probably give you some money or something like that. You know, whatever I can afford through your PayPal account, because I do believe in supporting what it is that you believe in. You know.
I dig it. I appreciate it. Yeah, the archive. Thank you for reminding me. Actually, the archives. I've encouraged folks to download the programs if you find them to be constructive. If you know, think it would be of some value to share that information with other folks. Doing this program and having to go to download all the sound clips and everything, I had to download some programs that I didn't have, and some of the programs. I was not able to download them. Like, the links didn't work. You couldn't listen to the archive program. And I had to, now that I have invested, given the white people at Blog Talk Radio a few nickels, they are more responsive to helping. So I was able to contact the white people immediately and say, you know, what is up? Oh, I'm echoing a little bit. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I don't know who it was.
Can I ask you one last question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm sorry. How I even found out about this show, ironically, was I don't know what I was looking for, and I ran across your show, like a downloaded show of yours on somebody else's site. And I think they stream it on somebody else's site. And I forget, I think it's called like Liberation Radio or something like that, Lib Radio or something like that. Are you familiar with that site?
No, I'm not.
Well, they look it up, LIB, Lib Radio. So it's your old shows are on there. And again, I'm not even sure what even got me there because I got that through a link through somebody else's site. But this is a few weeks ago, so I've only been listening for the last few weeks. But one of the first shows I'd ever heard was this one guy, or it wasn't the show. It was a show, I think, a few shows after, with this one guy who you said was actually in Homeland Security or something like that.
Yes, Irritated Genie, a.k.a.
Right.
Ayo Kamathi.
Right, are you laughing?
Oh, well, obviously, now, yes.
Well, yeah, because the question I have is that since you said that he was in Homeland Security, has he been back on your show?
No, sir.
And has he given you any sort of response or something like that?
We talked about this on previous shows. He responded. I'll try to use as few words as possible. He responded.
Okay, but did he deny it?
No, he admitted on video that he is indeed employed at Homeland Security, and I Googled his name this week, and it still popped up on the Homeland Security website as an employee there. So January... No, Homeland Security, not TSA, not TSA, not TSA, Homeland Security. And I have a link. If you go back to listen to some of those previous broadcasts, there are links to his specific page. It's not TSA.
Wow. That's deep. Well, he didn't deny it, so wow, that's funny. It's very rare that you catch a spy in the act, man. It's not till usually 20 years later that you catch him after the fact through declassified FBI files or some shit like that, you know?
Oh, watch the language. I didn't say he was a spy. I just like being careful about words. I did not say he was a spy. I haven't said anyone is a spy. I just said, you know, factual information to me. He is a Homeland Security employee.
Okay, so with that said, if he's not a spy, and again, Gus didn't say this. I said it. But if he's not a spy, then he can come back on the show tomorrow, and everything will be just as it is then, pretty much. It just happens that you know where he works at. Hell, he might be a janitor for Homeland Security, for all you know.
I don't believe him to be a janitor, but anyone working at Homeland Security, I would have suspicions. At any rate, I don't want to get off on that topic for this program.
Yeah,
I want to stay focused on the topic. So thank you for the commentary. I appreciate it. And, continue to listen if you find it to be constructive. I did want to let folks know about the archives because I felt that was important. If you find the program to be constructive and any program at Blog Talk Radio that you think is constructive, I'm still picking up some background noise. Not sure where that's coming from. Okay. If you find the program to be of constructive value, download it because, as I said, I was going through the archives today and I was attempting to download some of the programs and I was not able to. Some of the archives, they just wouldn't download, they wouldn't play because I contacted the white people at Blog Talk Radio immediately. They were able to rectify the problem and the links were working. But because there's so many programs at this point, it's kind of hard to comb through and to know, you know, for sure that all of the programs are working. So I encourage folks, download. If you have troubles, problems accessing the downloads, please let me know. You can shoot me an email or message at Blog Talk Radio. I would appreciate it. You can contact the white people at Blog Talk Radio as well and let them know that, you know, you're having issues accessing the program. That would be super, super helpful. If you want to talk, I see more people are calling in, but if you want to talk, press 1. There's somebody. Okay, line is quiet now. That's great. The people that called in that have a hand up, your line is open, and I got Mr. Nero as well. The other folks that called in, if you want to talk, press 1, and I'll get your line.
Can I be heard, Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings to you, Gus, to Mr. Nero, and to the other callers out there. I've also did my budgeting for the month, and I will be putting you on my donate list. I have you and the Haiti Relief Fund and a couple other places that I plan on donating to in order to get you up and on your feet and get things going for you. What I was going to ask you on your downloads, did you save them to a DVD drive so that you would have them for your reference, like your prior shows? Did you hear me, Gus?
I had to step away for 1 second, but I'm here with you now. Did you have a question for me specifically?
Yes, I was asking. You said the shows that were disappearing, because I fear that the white supremacists, they might be deleting some of your shows that are very constructive. Have you saved them to a hard drive or to a DVD-ROM so that you can have them?
I have downloaded... since I got my computer, I think I have all of the programs since I've downloaded my computer, and I have a good chunk of the ones from before I had my own computer, but I don't have them all just because, you know, it's a lot of them, so it would take a lot of time to just kind of keep going through and pressing buttons. But, I need to be more on the ball about going back and just snagging them, even if I get, like, 10 a day or 15 a day. That would, you know, make a dent.
Yeah, you had mentioned before that there was a site out there, something like a Blueberry or Burberry, that you could also find some of your old shows on.
Blueberry, BlueBrry.com, Blueberry.com. If you go there, you should be able to access any of the programs. As streaming audio, you should be able to download the content, download, stream. Yeah, and I think you can even read the description, so you can go there. And I think they have all of the programs. It's on some other podcast sites as well where you can access it. You can download it. Just download the program, because white people, they could, you know, delete it or what have you, or Blog Talk people could say that they can't access it, you know, down the road or something. So I would encourage download the program so that you have them. And, if something happens, you'll still be able to access the information.
And I've also been saving mine in Real Player, because I have 2 saves on my drive. I have my iTunes, and it's also backed up on Real Player. So for those out there who they might want to also look into that, because the Real Player, it would download all of them more so than with iTunes, because I believe you said there was a limit on the amount that would come down. So they might want to look also at the Real Player if they have that installed on their computer.
Excellent suggestion, if you think it to be of value.
But, Gus, your clips that you put together, those are excellent, excellent clips. And these are going to be in my cycle that I'm going to speak, because I plan on doing some programs for Black History Month coming up. So I will definitely take this on the feminization broadcast that you just did, because this is a compilation of all different shows. I will definitely have this in my rotation when I get ready to do my program coming up at the end of the month.
Outstanding. Glad to hear it. Yeah, we should really be serious about that. And again, especially black males, I think it's very important. I think with the lack of masculinity amongst black people, really important for the few black males that are out there that are, you know, trying to do the correct thing, to be clear about the incorrect nature of so-called homosexuality so that particularly children are hearing that. Just real important, real important. It's just not very many black folks, black males, you know, talking about homosexuality being an incorrect thing. And especially I don't hear very many people tying it to racism, white supremacy. So we should really get on the ball about that.
And I agree with you because I was like the other caller on last night. I was very confused before I started listening to you on Justice. And y'all are much younger than I am. And if y'all got the grasp of it, and that's when I really and truly started getting into it, because I used to believe the same way, like live and let live. But when you start making it about the, when I listened to Dr. Welsing and she was saying about what they were doing with removal of the males from the home, and the unionizing factor that's ongoing, the breakdown, it really and truly makes me go back and think, because as you said, white people are very good. They've been doing this for a very long time, so they are good at hiding their intentions. Like they say, the road to heaven is paved with good intentions, or whatever the saying is. So they are very good at what they do. So this has given me a firm grasp on looking at things with a different lens. So I'm so grateful to you and Justice. And I've been putting your information out there, so I'm hoping that more people will get this information and start taking stock of themselves, because we have to be very serious, as Dr. Cambone said, as you always say, we have got to be serious, because we're the only ones who are not serious about ourselves. That's why we're seeing all these stats coming out about us with our disease and our birth rate and homelessness and out of wedlock and all of this sort of stuff. It's always focused on the black family. We don't hear it about the Hispanics, the Asian, or any other group. It's always focused on the black family, and we should take this as a hint that these people are telling us something and they're planning on making another move.
Agreed. We have 7 minutes left in the live feed. If you want to call in, for the folks who did call in, if you are interested in speaking, press 1, and I can get your line to make sure you're available to talk. I thought Mr. Nero was there. It looks like we lost Mr. Nero. Perhaps he'll ring back in down the road. The other folks that dialed in, your lines are open as well. And I'll make sure before we get too deep into it, Justice, her email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com, justice.asap@yahoo.com, and her blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. She has her PayPal account on her blog, so you can support and invest in her efforts as well. But the other folks who called in, your line is open, and if you want to talk, just press 1.
May I speak?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. Actually, I've been following maybe for the last month your shows, and having an anthropological background, it's logical to conclude that as long as Africans in America live among the whites, that we will, some of us at least, will absorb a significant amount of their values, or their lack of morals and their culture. So the whole homosexual thing is just a byproduct of Africans who are living in America, living among whites, that we are seeing the result of this over 500 years of living among them, that we are slowly, if not quickly, becoming them to a certain extent, for a significant amount of us, becoming, absorbing their culture. And so, obviously, the homosexual thing is tied into the whole white supremacy racism, because this has been historically a part of European Caucasoid culture. Hello?
Yes, sir. You can be heard. You can be heard. I'm echoing.
Oh, I just made a statement. I didn't know if you heard it.
Yes, sir. We can
hear you clear. Okay. So, yeah, I was finished with my statement.
Okay. I want to make sure I can speak. Okay. Yeah, I can speak without echoing now. Yeah, I agree. As long as we're in the system of racism, white supremacy, non-white people, their conduct, the way they function, is going to reflect the values of white people, the white people who believe in and practice racism, white supremacy. So, yeah, and that's why I say I think we should be staunchly opposed to that if we're really serious about replacing white supremacy with justice immediately. Like, the homosexuality thing is a no-go. we really got to take a stand about that thing. The other folks who dialed in, your lines are open as well. If you are interested in saying anything, and we have about 2 minutes left in the live stream, so if you are interested in speaking, you should probably call now. Or listening, you should probably call now, and just remember to press one, and I can get your line open.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, I have pressed. I was saying, can I be heard? But I don't think he was hearing me. Yeah, I was going to say, cause whatever was speaking before, when he was saying he had an anthropological background, in that book, Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars, he uses the term effeminization. And he says that anybody that was in contact with the Roman society, the men became effeminate. That book is like, you know, I read a lot of war chronicles. That book is a war, and how he defeated those people would divide and conquer. And when you read somebody say that being in contact with us makes the man effeminate, it just kind of made an impression on me, because a lot of people equate this America with Rome, you know, and I definitely feel like we have to be as black males as masculine as possible. I mean, some of these colors that men wear. My little nephews, you know, I make sure I point out to them, you know, things that are effeminate, just to let them know. I mean, you know, when they see me, it's like I don't pull no punches. I make sure that I point out what's effeminate and what's not. And I mean, you know, when Nellie Fuller was talking about the Max Robinson, I mean, the rumor was that he was gay. I mean, just to have that rumor, to me it's like, you know, to be mistaken for a gay person or whatever. I don't think I could be mistaken for a gay person, you know what I'm saying? They're approached like, you know, stop kidding around. I know you're gay. You know, like the one guest that you had on said that, you know, was said to him. So, I mean, if you kind of thinking that you on some ambiguous metrosexual thing, just things like, you know, you shave off all your hair on your face, to me that's effeminate. I mean, why would you do that? that, I mean, females have, you know, no hair on their face. And I noticed that, like, when, and I don't have, like, a bunch of hair on my face, but I noticed when my hair started growing on my face and I let my hair grow out, people were looking at me differently. They didn't like it. I was getting, like, overt racist comments made, you know, to myself. And it was very weird because I'm not, you know, so I said, I didn't know what it was at first. You know, I'm not going to lie. I didn't realize it was because, you know, of just being masculine. And so, but I realized in hindsight that it was because people didn't appreciate. I mean, when I started hearing comments like militant, you know, you're militant, and things like that. And I never spoke on no nationalist or Black Panther type of rhetoric. So they were just talking about how I looked. So, yeah, man, I think for the young men, you know, your the youth, if you're, you know, if you're a man, if you're a Black male, you should be masculine. And basically, to me, that just means anything that the racist white, so-called white male is doing, you know, try. I mean, I'm thinking the opposite would probably be the best way to go on a lot of those things.
Oh, 909.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, I'm glad to hear you on tonight, and I must commend you for what you just said, because within about the past 10 or 15 years, I've started seeing men arching their eyebrows. As you said, they're selling makeup in for men now. You go to certain department stores, I guess, with when Prince came out, and he started this metrosexual look with the makeup and the eyebrows and so on. Now you're seeing men, their departments, in certain departments, they're selling makeup made specifically for men. So we do see that the feminization of the men has been ongoing for a very long time.
Yes, it's a lie. It's a lie that females like that, I think. I mean, I can't say that I've always been totally in tune. I mean, I've wore some floral shirts in my time and things like that, but that I wouldn't wear now. But just how I am now, I haven't had any problems, you know, with females. So I think that they lie and say, oh, females like you to be a little, you know, fruity or whatever. That's a lie. That's a lie. I mean, if anything, I think I've gotten more, you know, I've seen evidence of the opposite, actually.
Yes. Well, can I be heard?
Yes.
I would say as a female, I like for a male to be well-groomed, meaning like, you know, you're neat and clean, edged up, but my God, I don't want to see a man with waxed eyebrows, and I see it a lot, and it does look really effeminate, arched eyebrows, I should say. Like, if you have a unibrow, yeah, please have somebody clean up the middle, but, like, don't arch your eyebrows. And I think it actually does look, masculine when a male is wearing facial hair. And I told someone before, I think that men are supposed to be hairier. I think they're supposed to have longer eyelashes than the female. If you look at a lot of males in the animal kingdom, they tend to have more adornment as far as hair. Like the lion has a mane, the male peacock is actually, you know, he stands out more than the female. And I think for men, for males, that the facial hair does that. It distinguishes the male from the female. And I think it does actually make a male look a lot more masculine. Yeah, I think the society promotes that whole clean-shaven kind of baby face look, you know?
Yeah, I even hear it with the effeminization has become Black power, as far as I'm concerned, because I'm hearing that, you know, well, the Egyptians didn't have hair on their face and, you know, they shaved and whatnot. You know, Egyptians wore mini skirts and whatnot. I mean, it's like Gus was saying. I mean, man, that's not cool.
But you know what? We live in a different culture than them, a different climate, and I'm pretty sure there was a difference in garments for males in Egypt and females, regardless of whether they wore something we would call a skirt today. I'm pretty sure there was a distinguishing characteristic between male and female clothing.
And you're correct on page 18, because if you look at most African depictions, the men and the women together, they're always fully clothed. They're not naked. You might see the men be in the top, might be off like the Egyptian models. But if you go see them in Europe, and you see all the cherubims and all the women, they're all naked. Women, the men together, fail to pose. They correct food, but after the painting, you do not find that type of bomb depiction.
Is that you? I think your phone is breaking up. I'm not sure. Did you guys hear clearly?
It was breaking up.
Yeah, it was really.
Yeah, I just want to say I've never had a fully clean shaven face in my life. And just being here in Atlanta since 2004, I mean, I think I went out of my way to look even more masculine. Just being
picking up a lot of background noise. A lot of background noise.
I'll mute my phone. I know.
Oh, okay. I got it. I figured it out. We got it. We're good. Thank
you. Yeah, I was just saying, just being here in Atlanta, I've actually went out of my way just to appear. I find myself going out of my way just to appear more masculine. And it's I don't know. I don't understand it, but I have noticed that down here, it seems like women are attracted to.
If you could mute your line if you're not speaking, that would be very helpful, because I keep picking up quite a bit of background noise. The gentleman who was speaking, if you want to continue, sorry about that, sir.
I was just saying, just in Atlanta, I have noticed that I don't know if it's a progression of things or that women are becoming more confused, but I have noticed that women in Atlanta are I've seen them with some guys that look quite feminine, in my opinion. So, you know, I don't know. I think maybe it's just the confusion, and that's what I attribute it to, confusion.
Well, the
Oh, I was just going to say social engineering, that the video in the description, that is social engineering. That's a great term I picked up doing this program. My Princess Boy, social engineering at its best. The mother, I've been in contact with her publicist, and she's supposed to be coming on the program soon. So hopefully, yeah, we'll get to discuss that in detail down the road. 818, go ahead. Oh, and 6522, your line is open. Sorry, 6522, your line is open. 818, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have seen the feminization of males being marketed to females. I just remember as a little girl, I remember hearing adults around me discussing the whole men with earrings thing, because then, at that time, it was something that only so-called gay men did. And I just remember all this commotion and confusion among the adults I was around about, well, which ear is it that's supposed to mean a guy is gay, left ear or right ear? Well, I'm not getting my ears pierced in either one. And just to grow up and watch the progression from trying to figure out was it the left side or the right side that meant you were gay, to now mainstream, just males everywhere, including T.D. Jakes, having one if not both ears pierced, to watching Terrell Owens on TV, and I think he had his toenails painted or something, and I'm seeing white males do it too, but to me it's very unattractive. And I remember growing up, most of the males around me, the adult males, had either a mustache, a full beard, a mustache and goatee, but they were very masculine males. And And I don't think I would have ever dreamed of seeing a man growing up, the adults around me having their underwear, you know, showing and their pants hanging down. But I've noticed a drastic change. You'll even see Wendy Williams promoting it on her show, promoting men dressed as females and wearing handbags and Birkin bags and things.
That'd be hard.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
To the caller who said that women are now confused, I think that is so true. I really do believe that women are confused now because, like, a lot of women like, you know, the brother with the earrings, with the nice, you know, clean face, the low cut, Caesar cut, like just something like fresh to death. Like, you know, they the dudes that spend more time than females get ready. Now, I think that's just disgusting. Like, I like to see a manly man, you know what I mean? Like hair, afro, like just rugged. But I really do think that that's what women go for now. That's what they really like. And it's really disgusting. Like, even dudes, like, now they're getting, like, cuts in their eyebrows, like the three cuts in their eyebrows. Like, what is that about? That just is, doesn't look right. So I don't know what's going on, but yeah, it's crazy. I'm 24 years old, and the women are definitely liking like brothers like that. I don't know why.
Definitely. What part of the world are you at?
Well, right now I'm in Tampa, but I'm from Jersey. I lived in San Diego, and I also lived in North Carolina. And the dudes who, like, you know, had the low cut with the waves and the earrings and, like, the fashionable clothes, like, you know, it was nice clothing, but it was kind of like, you know, why are you dressing like that? Why you got that purple shirt on, that pink shirt, you know? You know, those are the dudes that would get most play. They were, like, the players.
Do you think it has to do with males dressed like that being showcased in the media and in rap and music, things like that?
Definitely. Definitely. But I also think it's appealing to them. Like, oh, he looks cute. Like, you know, now it's, like, cute. You know what I mean? He's cute.
It's social engineering. I mean, you have to think about how the brain works. I mean, it can, like, that. Your mind can play tricks on you, or not really so much the mind, but I think probably the brain can. It's just like black males, you know, not wanting the dark female. It's. I don't think that it's because of attraction. I just think it's a mind trick,
mm-hmm.
where you're being. It's like Tuga said, social engineering. I think people they say, "Oh, social engineering," but what it really is brainwashing. They're making, you know, they're choosing your taste, and if you really sat down and thought about it for a minute, you'd be like, no, I don't like that. You know, I remember my sister, you know, my brother-in-law, he had some pants with a design on the butt, you know what I'm saying, and one of those tight shirts. I think he was trying to, you know, fit in or something, I don't know, but she said, if we're not going out, would you dress like that, you know, and he took it off. I never seen him in nothing like that ever. But yeah, she told him straight up, like, I'm not going out with you looking like that. You're looking, that's you're looking kind of effeminate. You have designs on the back of your butt on your jeans and a tight shirt on. I mean, man. And you can't promote that stuff. I've never seen a Tyler Perry movie. So my nephews and my nieces ain't never seen me watch no Will and Grace. I mean, I don't watch TV. I don't have a TV. But I'm just saying, I ain't watching anything like that. I couldn't even not once let them see me do that. Not that I want to, but even just to placate someone that might be watching it, I'm not watching it. And they know exactly that I'm against it because they tried to show me some things that I felt were effeminate. And I told them, no, this right here is not what it is, and I told them, and they look up to me, so now they have pretty much the same views. They, when they see stuff like that, they say, nah, this is gay, you know, within school or on mm-hmm. television, they say this is effeminate, you know what I'm saying? And even my little nieces or whatever, they're the, man, the young, seems like the younger, the smarter, man. I mean, they catch on very fast if the adult is respected, I guess, or if he or she is making a stand, man, you don't have to tell them too many times that what they you know, when they present something to you, let them know right then and there, that's unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. Well, you watch Will and Grace. You watch the gays. I mean, then you're a hypocrite.
Yeah, so, I remember reading a show description when Dr. Baruti was on. He said something like, laughter makes the heart grow fonder. And I had heard that analogy before, but I never had heard it used in that context. And when I read it, I said, this makes sense because, I mean, I had watched Tyler Perry movies and stuff like that, and I did think some of the stuff was funny when I was confused, but I had no idea what I was looking at. I didn't understand that it was a tactic that they were using on us.
Because it gets you to let your guard down, huh?
Exactly.
It's not exactly. Only that, but as Dr. Baruti was saying in his show, that lots of times that we laugh, even though it's not funny, we might be nervous if we make that nervous giggle, and it's the opening. Because a lot of times that's what it is. It's the doorway for people to walk in and say or do whatever it is that they want to do. Because now they feel comfortable by you making that giggle, even though it might be a nervous giggle, they come right on in.
The person at 6132, your line is open, 6132, and yeah, never mind.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Peace, guys. Peace, family. How y'all doing?
Right.
As well as can be expected.
Yeah, I know that's right. My name's Pritch, man. I was calling. I like the show, man. I love the show. Love what you're doing, man. Appreciate everything, all the knowledge you're bringing. What's up with the gender switch day? Do you all know about that?
No.
I don't.
Gender switch day. They have. You know how, like, in school, you can, like, you know, they have a throwback day, school color day. Now it's a gender switch day where one of the schools here has done it already, last year. But the girls go to school with drawn on mustaches, baggy pants, you know, stuff like what men, the boys wear, whatever. And the guys go to school with halter tops and earrings. And these aren't necessarily big, you know what I'm saying? These aren't necessarily gay children, homosexuals. These are heterosexuals dressing up, gender switching.
What part of the country are you in? Can you specify the state?
I'm in VA. I'm from Virginia.
Gus, that's your area.
VA, what part of, well.
Well, I'm in the Tidewater. I'm in Hampton.
Oh, wow. That's, wow.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I have friends that, you know, have kids. Well, I'm 32. I have friends in, you know, other parts of the country saying they're doing this too.
Wow. And the administrator's parents don't say anything?
Exactly. Well, I don't have no kids, so, I mean, but honestly, like, I don't know, like, people aren't doing anything about it. Like, they're letting this ride.
I'm sorry for interrupting. I was just saying their parents are watching Tyler Perry. You know,
that's right.
I mean, it's hard.
I'm sorry, Gus. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was thinking, did anybody's parents tell them that when they had that thing in school where the girls were supposed to ask the boys out or whatever?
Sadie Hawkins.
Sadie Hawkins. Did anybody's parents tell them, especially as a female, no, that's not really how you want the roles to be? I mean, no, it becomes an inequality or male chauvinist. Oh, females can't ask males out. So that was the first step.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I was around my grandparents, so my grandmother let me know that the male is supposed to approach you.
Word. That's right.
And my other grandpa used to say, keep your legs closed and your skirt tails down and don't let no man make a monkey out of you. So thank God for grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. But you look at the dances that someone had mentioned this on a couple of Gus's shows about the dances that are out now where the boys and the girls are shaking their rumps and doing all of these female dance moves
that are out here now. And I had my nephew, so I had to put them in check. I said, I said, you don't be dropping it like it's hot and all of this kind of nonsense. I said, that's not all my man dance.
I hate to disappoint you, but it's worse than that now. There's a new thing going on YouTube called the dick slang.
Oh,
and the video I saw
that.
Was
oh, my
a bunch
God.
Of males in, like, boxers or shorts or underwear of some sort that were not too tight. And the gist of the dance was to make your genitals flop around. And then there were black females that responded with the titty slang, where they were doing the same thing with their breasts.
Oh, my God.
We have come to this.
Man, we got some work to do.
It's been a really depressing week for me as far as being black goes. That and watching other victims tear other victims apart. Like, white people are paying them to do this. I mean, man, it's been brutal.
You want to hear some songs. I mean, Atlanta with the strip club culture, they got some songs they play on the radio down here that's just like, whoa.
I know. Frankie and Wanda. I'm in Atlanta, so I'm familiar with V103 and all of that junk that they put out.
Oh, my goodness.
Man, we got to study war. We got to study war. I mean, these are all tactics that they're using, man. It to effeminize us. Just being around them effeminizes us. I mean, I have my love affair with the right white authors and whatnot. I mean, I don't like white people. I tell my nephews, I tell everybody, man, I don't like them. I know just being around them is gross. You feel what I'm saying? I mean, this is the most this war right here. It's like playing football with a tennis racket. I mean, I don't understand I just don't understand what kind of war is this where you like your enemy. I've read wars from here, from all the way to the past. They always had total contempt for their enemy. Every war, the Japanese didn't like the Americans. The Romans didn't like the Greeks or whatever. They didn't like each other. They hated each other. They felt like superior to them. The Japanese didn't like, you know, it's like they didn't like them. You have to, I feel like that's, sorry, I just feel like that's got to be, like, I just got to be something where you watch them on TV and you just be like, man, these people are gross. Like, this is damaging me just watching this right here.
Yeah.
Just being around them is like, man, I just, that's how we got to be like that, man. That's the only way, that's war right there. I mean, that's the only
I think
way
unfortunately
I see.
We've been around them for 500 years and they've kept us in a state of dependence on them. And I think it's just an extended case of Stockholm Syndrome. It's difficult to see somebody as your enemy who, though they mistreat you, you still depend on for all of your needs to be met. They tell you how to think. They tell you who to worship.
Right.
They're the point of reference for everything that seems to be worth anything successful and working. And they have a global marketing campaign called the media.
Now, can we separate the two? Can I say, you know what, I need a job, I need to fill out these taxes or whatever. Can we separate that with, I mean, that's a necessity. I can't fault myself for, you know, staying out of prison or whatever the case may be. I mean, we need to come up with some type of understanding that's just a necessity. Necessity and, I mean, what do you want? I'm not going to die. I'm going to do what I have to do to survive, and I'm going to counter this. That's what we need. I don't think it's going back to no his. I don't know. I separate the two. I do what I have to do.
Yeah, I do too. I've been told, even when I was confused, I was totally repulsed by white people ever since I was like, I'd probably say since a preteen. You know what I mean? When I was younger, I mean, I, you know what I mean? But since I've been 12, 13 years old, since I was falsely arrested by him, I've been totally, and that came from my father as well, you know? So I'm a second generation of hating white people over here.
I heard Umar Abdullah Johnson say on a blog talk radio show the other day, he said that he thinks black people like to live in Negro land. And he said, Negro land is that world where black people don't acknowledge any of their realities. They pretend that the problems that exist don't exist, and they see everything the way they want to see them in order not to have to deal with anything or solve any problems.
Yep, life's too rough.
That's a mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mental illness.
Wellness.
Well, you get a strong dose of it every day. You just go on Facebook. That's why I just go on Facebook and just look at what people post. Mental illness.
Yeah, it's sad, man. It's very sad.
But these tools are just distractions. It's Facebook, the MySpace. I very seldom ever go and use Facebook or any one of those because it's just something for you to waste time not doing anything unless you have a really constructive post to put out there to inform us about racism, white supremacy, and what's going on. It's a waste of time to go up there and be chatting about celebrity lifestyle and what's going on. It's just
exactly. All of them are. YouTube's all. I mean, sit there and watch six videos. An hour's gone by because they're 10 minutes apiece. So your hour of time has gone by and you ain't even know.
I used to research.
Brought up the CIA and. The CIA and that Facebook, if you do research, I mean, they mm-hmm. help set that thing up, you know.
Google all set it up.
I mean, it's just data mining. Like I said, this war is ridiculous, man. I mean, Mr. Nero said that we underestimate our enemy. Yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
If you white identified or if you bigging up somebody that came out with some so-called secrets, man, that's a white person. You feel me? That's just bottom line. That's disinformation, propaganda. You know, you got to have that in the forefront.
You're right, because black people, we are spiritual beings. These people didn't know anything about religion, about a God concept until they came to us. And we're going to go along and believe with this foolishness, for instance, this Bible that they like to be toting all about. I'm talking about every book in the Bible in the New Testament. It has to do where the Romans and the Greek occupied Galatians, Philippians, all of these places. It doesn't have anything to do with any part of the African continent. So why would you want to think that this book has to anything to do with you? Because if Jesus was that you love so much, if he had something for you, he would have had a letter written to the Ethiopians.
Because most of us are taught that we're Gentiles, so we learn to accept those books as pertaining to us. The church teaches that if you're not the so-called Jewish people, you're a Gentile.
Hmm.
But the New Testament.
I was just going to ask the black males that are on the line, have they ever read any war annals? Are they studying war at all?
Sounds good.
No, I was talking to my father the other day. He was talking to me about chess, and he told me, you know, chess is a war game, and you know, things like that. But no, I haven't really studied any kind of war tactics.
Well, read Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars. There's two part every war that's been fought, the Civil War, the so-called War of Independence. Go back to that Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars. Read it. It's an important read to understand the war tactics that's been used on us, you know, since then. Thousands of years of the same tactics that we haven't seemed to figure out. So please, black male, if you're hearing this, just read that. I know people say they read Sun Tzu, and I've read it too. But, start with that Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars. It's two parts. One, the first part is Gallic Wars, and the second part is the Civil War.
Okay.
Read it. You'll find out mad tactics, man. Don't procrastinate. Like, war is not about procrastination. I don't know why you fight no war and relaxing. So, I mean, get on it, if you will.
Indeed. Good looking, brother.
You're right, 909, because even the language that we are speaking in a Roman script. The English language, the Greek, the Italian, all of those languages is a Roman script. They only have one script that they speak in,
mm-hmm.
while the African script, we have thousands.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that. I mean, even in their language is effeminate, it's homosexual, antisexual. The language is antisexual. They say it. They even say it themselves. They have a their language is homosexual or antisexual. Just read this stuff, man. Plato, Aristotle, they all Darwin, whoever, they all will come out and say what it is that their little effeminate ways and the antisexual nature behind their whole being, and it says that just being around them is going to make you effeminate.
Exactly.
They say it themselves. That's what they found out when they went and conquered people. They said the men became effeminate just by having that Roman occupation being there. So.
Yeah, yeah. They were boy lovers, catamites, pages.
And that's what they're doing on the African continent right now, because you saw what the Greeks, they came in there, they wiped out the Egyptians, the last dynasty, to totally destroy them and put them into the condition that they're in now. Now they're back on the African continent working on the other blacks who were throwing away indigenous Christianity and taking up the Christian Bible and going along with this foolishness and instead of everything else that comes along with it.
Yeah, Gus said, Gus, I don't know if that was, yeah, it was logical. At first, I was like, that's kind of illogical, saying that the European, the racist man, racist woman, their family structure is stronger than the black family structure. But when you think about it, we was doing something wrong. So if we had like 12 wives, maybe that was why we wasn't ready for that invasion. Because I mean, we got to rethink that. You know, that could have been. Something was wrong. Our philosophy was it wasn't right, because when they came in there, they pretty much it wasn't right. So, yeah, I don't really think I want to go back to, I don't think I really want to go back to some of that stuff, man. I think we have to think new, something different. And I think the first step is when you see them and just don't like them. I mean, just train yourself and condition yourself to know that just being around them is going to make you an effeminate. If you can agree to that fact, I mean, that should put you on another footing, a war footing, I think. Because every war I read about, they always hated their enemies. Not so much hated, but they had a disdain. They didn't like them at all. So we need to change that immediately.
I just wanted to ask, because I heard people, you know, commenting about that the other day, about, you know, having 12 wives and things like that. I just wanted to ask, because I've always heard that the female population has always been much greater than the male population. So just say if we were in a system of justice and, you know what I'm saying, the man and the woman had balance, I mean, what do you think? You think some women just wouldn't have a man, couldn't have a man? I mean, I'm just interested into, you know, what people think about that.
In the multiplicity of wives in those times, most of it was not, the men weren't sleeping with them. They were basically for protection, like their husband died.
Okay.
And they didn't come in to make sure that they're going to be protected.
Yeah, it wasn't always about the sex.
Well, yeah, I think that gets tainted from us being in this culture over here where people are into orgies and things like that, because African people that I have talked to have said, you know, there aren't any orgies going on. Each wife has her own relationship with their husband.
No, we didn't participate in none of that stuff.
Right, and it's just that husband and that wife, but what you get is an end result. You get huge family units.
Mm-hmm.
I think family is considered wealth, so I know a particular Nigerian, I forget how many brothers and sisters he told me he has at home, but I think his father has four wives. But they had pretty huge families, and I think it was a way of also preserving wealth and gaining political power, because the largest families had the most political power. Now, I hear a lot of black males advocating polygamy today, saying it's the solution to the black woman's problem of not being able to find a husband, but what I see problematic in that is most of the black males that I see out here have not been able to commit to and successfully take care of one woman and child. So I don't see how polygamy would work if it's a struggle and a challenge to be with one person.
Yeah, we're not in the right mind frame for that.
We're not ready for that type of life.
I agree with that.
No, because we've been turned upside down and inside out to the point that, you know, like you said, one relationship is not even working. I mean, a relationship with one person is not even working. So to go and try to think that you can get 5-6 women off of the society that we live in now, good luck.
Yeah, and there's no community unit.
Yeah, you watch
a cultural
all
unit
day.
To
Hope,
enforce
good luck,
responsibility. Because see, in that situation, like he was telling me, he said even if a husband and wife get divorced, the husband maintains custody of the children because he's expected to provide, and it's a shameful thing if he doesn't take care of his children and of his family. That doesn't exist over here.
Yeah, we're having a hard time with that.
I wanted to make sure I got in the listing for the sound clips really quick, because I did say I was going to do that. In case anybody is interested, I'll put it in the description, but I know. And I am familiar with LIB Radio. I forgot that from earlier. You said Liberation Radio, and I wasn't thinking that, but LIB Radio, I am familiar with that for sure. At any rate, the playlist, Dr. Robert Perkinson, he was the gentleman who was talking about the prison system in Texas. He also had the sound clip about white people suspected, most likely racists in Texas, removing the word justice from the information the kindergartners had to learn. But that was in June of 2010. The sound clip, Dr. Baruti, that was from the first time he was on the program in February of 2010. Next was Dr. Nell Irvin Painter. She was on the program in June of 2010. It's Dr. Perkinson again after that. Dr. Welsing was after that, and that was the fifth time she was on, which also June, I guess that was a good month, June 2010. Next is Frederick Gooding and Khalid Patterson. That is from September of 2009. Got to go a ways back to get to that one, but I think well worth it. Next was Dr. Judith Reisman. She was on in September of 2010. Next was Mr. Shane Lee. He was on in October of 2010. Next was Mr. Fuller. You will not find that in the archives. Next is that's from June 2010. The Boondocks and the Gayness discussed episodes 8 and 9 from the Boondocks, the Pause episode, and the episode where they did a parody of Tyler Perry. Next, the sound clip where the caller he was discussing for Colored Girls, that's in October of 2010 with Pam, co-author of Trojan Horse. She'll be back this coming Monday. The next two clips were Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. They were both from the same program. October of 2009, October of 2009, and the female caller that was speaking with him, the gay mentor, I think she has her own program here at Blog Talk Radio, the gay mentor. Incidentally, that sound clip right there is probably one of my favorite programs and a wonderful illustration of why we still have no chat room, because she might have been willing to stay on the line a little longer so that Mr. Fuller could have asked her that question. Why are you participating in this conversation if, you know, you are happy? But she was aggravated not only with Mr. Fuller, but the people in the chat room. And I think it might have been primarily the people in the chat room because they were typing and saying things. I think there might have been some name calling, and she got upset and kind of left abruptly. But, yeah, the chat room. And the last sound clip was Terrence Dean, November of 2010. So those are all the sound clips. And there could have been a lot more, but, you know, that's what it was. And I did want to get back on topic last few minutes before we wrap things up. If anybody had anything else to share related to the so-called homosexual issue. I know one thing, the program yesterday with Scott Lively, it clarified for me the importance and accuracy of the term anti-sexual. Using the term anti-sexual, there is no the opposite of sex. Sex is the reproductive act between a male and a female. Homosexuality is not sex. You frame it, you use your words in such a way that homosexuality is totally excluded. I think that is the product of social engineering when people, black people, non-white people, think that homosexuality is a form of sex, that you have a variety of different types of sex. That is social engineering, and we should really whole new appreciation for the term anti-sexual.
You also had the sound clip, Gus, from the gay black male from Atlanta.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Thank you. He's in between Mr. Fuller and Terrence Dean. Thank you for catching that. Proud gay black man, and that was in January of 2011. You'll find that one. Thank you for catching that.
Well, I say I would ask the black males, because I know that for myself, I have to make sure that, because sometimes I don't feel supported, you know what I'm saying, being a black male and having the stance of, you know, taking the stance that I've taken. And I'm not going to say that I slacked off speaking out on it, but I think I kind of didn't concentrate on it as much, so my words I didn't use my words as efficiently as I could have, so it became a debate, you know. So just like with anti-sexual, I mean, that's what it is. But when you start using terms like hetero and homo and this and that, I think we should take it seriously and make sure that we do speak out, and make sure that when we do speak out, our words are the most effective and efficient that we can offer. So even if it's repeating yourself over and over again, have something to say, especially around the young people. When you see something incorrect, especially when it comes to homosexuality, have something to present to them and to make your point that this is totally incorrect and unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree too. I kind of slacked off from speaking about it just because it just, you know, like I said, I guess I couldn't. It just felt like people were just like coming at you like you're this, you're that, you're a hate monger, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of just like, hey, I'm gonna have my opinion. You know, people gonna have their opinion. And as long as, you know, as long as they don't bring it in my circumference, I'm just going to hold my opinion and kind of hold my corner.
Yeah, you're not alone in feeling that way. I've had black male friends of mine express frustration as well and feel like they don't have any support and they're alone when they try to do the right thing and, you know, share information with people.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not under any illusion that I'm a black male, you know, and nobody trying to listen to what no black male has to say, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I feel that, But at the same time, I just say, whatever, man. I know it's just, I could be, you know, speaking in the wind, but I want to make a greater effort. Because it's just like exercising. I know I was stronger than I am now, and then I got weak because I wasn't exercising that stance. So, just get stronger and, you know, just realize. I mean, I guess the truth of the matter is you are a black male. You're not going to be taken seriously. But I think the young people, they, when they see a black male, especially a masculine one, you're like a god to them. So, you know, as long as you're not flip-flopping, I think we can have an effect on the youngsters.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, I definitely want to speak out more, but like I said, I want to read a little bit more. I want to be more careful with my words. I want to be a little bit more articulate so I can really express myself the way I want to express myself when I say things. So that's the only reason I kind of find myself kind of, you know, just trying to become less confused before I really, you know, step out there, because I find you got to be 10 times sharper than ignorant people to you know what I mean?
Yeah, son. No doubt.
Well, yeah, do it. I say do it, and, you know, do it, man, do it. Just do it, and you'll get stronger, and we'll hear it, like, when you call in or whatever, and you'll, I don't know, I just feel like, man, I support you, man, because I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Exactly what you said, trying to get more efficient. And it'll be evidenced by when you call in or something, and then people at least they'll say, okay, I'm trying to do the same thing. He's on point, like Gus. Gus be on point, man. I'd be like, dang, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, he took his stand and he's sticking with it. This is what he does. This is his work. So I don't know. He's inspiration to me. You know what I'm saying? So
me as well.
I got a movie for you guys, if you want. It's called There Will Be Blood. It's a movie called
New movie?
No, I think it came out a couple of years ago. But it's man, it's one of my favorites. Racism, white supremacy, just seeing the mind of racist. I mean, it's an excellent, like, man, it's excellent. I wouldn't recommend it. Just watch it, and you would get a, you, man, just watch it.
Do you know where I
can
download it? Hello?
Did you say, do I know if you can download it?
You know where I can download it?
Try Pirate Bay. If you have a BitTorrent downloader, try piratebay.org.
Okay, Pirate Bay.
You'll probably have to download it and then watch it once you, you know, get the torrent on your computer.
Okay.
Did you all see Gang Related? That came on TV last night.
Mm-mm.
With Tupac Shakur and, is it Jim Belushi? One of the Belushis?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it a while back.
Yeah, I was like, wow. When he told the black female stripper that he valued loyalty and he was as loyal to her as he was to his partner, and he wound up trying to kill both of them. Yeah, that was pretty interesting to watch, you know, not being as confused as I used to be before, even though it's my first time seeing it. But, man, yeah, some things, they just really stand out at you. Or to you.
I wanted to say this about homosexuality that I wanted to see what you guys' thoughts on it was. Mr. Lively, he was talking about the homosexuals and the Nazis. And then we have the homosexuals and the Greeks. And they were some of the most savage so-called warriors the Booty Warrior. I mean, I just wanted to see what you guys thought as far as equating homosexuality with Abu Ghraib and torture. I mean, do you guys see the association between homosexuality and, I guess, psychotic behavior, to where you will torture somebody just like the Nazis did, or like the Romans did? They embowel people, went through their intestines to find swallowed coins. I mean, some of the things that they did, and they had the homosexuality behind it. I think that you guys see the association between that at all.
Yeah, psychological warfare and sexual violence.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense yesterday when he was saying, like, them being moralists, you know, sexually made it easier for them to commit all kind of immoral acts in war. So I kind of connected it to, I was like, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, I could never understand, like, I would hear, like, the Nazis would take babies and slam them off walls, you know, just all kind of crazy stuff. And I was like, what kind of people could do? And then, okay, I understand what kind of people can do that.
Exactly.
Because remember with the Abu Ghraib, those people, they were dark people. They were not, they're almost like black, non-white people. So when it comes to non-white people, they are dehumanized. They don't look. They look at them like bugs that you can squash them and move on with feel no remorse. And that's how they did with black babies. We used to feed them to alligators and smash their heads and do things like that to them.
Well, they're over in Iraq now. I just read a story recently about how a U.S. soldier raped a 14-year-old girl and then murdered her whole family.
Mm.
They're doing things like that, but they don't show that on the mainstream corporations you run media over here, and they're not going to because they have an interest in the war. But even the numbers they give us of non-white people that they kill over there, you don't even hear the half of it. And there's definitely, you can count on it that people are being, non-white people are being raped over there.
I kind of wanted to ask, Gus, I know it's a little bit off topic, but I keep seeing all these kind of things about remorse for the killer's family and the killer's family. And what do you think that's about?
Are they talking about the Arizona shooting or which?
Yeah, the Arizona shooting. They keep talking about the family. We know what the family's going through, and the family of the shooter.
Hmm. That's interesting. I don't hear them. I remember this time last year, it was Maurice Clemens in Seattle. He was the black male in the Seattle area that shot the enforcement officers. He killed, I believe it was four of them. And they prosecuted his so-called family members. They had his family members on the front page of the paper this past summer. They got felony counts. I think his sister or a female family member, she got like a 5-year sentence, fed time. They didn't have, it was no remorse at all. And I don't think I tend to hear that if it's a black person that's accused of a crime. I don't remember anyone talking about remorse for O.J. Simpson's family during that trial. I don't remember that at all. So, I mean, just that, right, the white identification. I mean, even a white person who has done this heinous act, we feel so sorry. His mother, his father, I mean, whatever. I was going to say really quick before we wrap up, we have about 7 minutes left. We'll be back tomorrow for the program dealing with racism at the collegiate level. That's not really like a lecture for folks to call in and kind of share per listener request. So tune in 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. And the homosexuality and violence. I don't know anybody, if you watch Oliver Stone's JFK,
yeah.
If you get the director's cut where he has the audio commentary, he's talking about Tommy Lee Jones' character,
who plays this white man who is a homosexual. And Oliver Stone is saying, you know, don't confuse homosexuality with tenderness or passion. These were homosexuals, but they were extremely violent men. Even the way that they engaged in their, you know, so-called homosexual activity was violent. It was around beating, and they depict some of this in the film. And it just, it stood out to me, and I was reminded of it yesterday. In fact, again, there's a YouTube video. I'm glad to hear some people thought that they got some constructive value from Scott Lively, because he has a YouTube video where he talks about this concept of homosexuality and extreme violence, like, you know, just historic levels of violence. And he was talking about the Spartans, and he said that that was a key component of what made them such a fearsome group. I think he touched on that on the program yesterday. But again, watch the movie 300, very successful. Check out that movie and, you know, see if it has any homoerotic elements to it now that you've heard this. And I'll hush. We have about 5 minutes left.
I knew males that went to see 300. I knew males that went to see 300 at the movie theater more than three times. When it came out, they liked it that much.
I have yet to see it.
That's same here.
I saw it on bootleg, and it wasn't all that clear. And don't mind, don't, they ain't trying to see it.
They think they had Lakeview Terrace on with Sam Jackson. I guess there must be something going on with Sam Jackson this week, because they had quite a few of his movies and Denzel. And the two of Sam Jackson and Spike Lee, they are both alumnus of Morehouse College.
They shot School Days on the campus of Morehouse, but they got thrown off the campus.
Mm-hmm.
They got thrown off the campus.
Why?
Go ahead.
No.
They saw the.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
To my knowledge, it was on the DVD. If you get the collector's edition, Spike Lee said this. So, you know, apparently the officials at Morehouse, they saw some of the footage while they were shooting, and they saw how School Days depicts some of the faculty and staff at Morehouse, and they didn't think it portrayed the school in a positive manner, so they gave them the boot. And yeah, he talks about this being a Morehouse and getting kicked off of his own campus. Like he talks about it on the director commentary. So yeah.
I was just saying, I noticed how a lot of black actors and comedians are fraternity men and black college graduates. I didn't know some of those guys, but you know, a lot of them are.
Denzel Washington's son graduated also from Morehouse, and I believe he plays professional ball. Do you know what team he plays for?
I don't think he plays in the NFL. I don't think he made it to the NFL.
Probably overseas. I mean, well, EuroLeague or something.
I would just say that there's a lot of people. So, Dr. Wasn't equated Oprah Winfrey with Sigmund Freud. The fact that he wasn't talking about the genocide that was about to go down with them Jews or whatever. And you got a lot of people running around calling themselves generals and captains and whatnot. I wouldn't follow it. I don't know. Anyway, I would just say if black males study war and don't be like Freud talking about something totally not the problem, focus on what's going on right now. That's the only thing that's worth talking about, in my opinion. I just wanted to say that.